Good evening, everybody, and bless you. Welcome to the November 4th Half Moon Bay City Council meeting. As a reminder, we have Spanish interpretation services available in person and on Zoom. On Point Language Solutions is in the back left corner if anyone needs assistance with interpretation services. Please head over there, and they'll give you a earpiece for interpretation. Victor or Nicholas will now provide information on how to receive interpretation services if you're in need of them. Would either of you? Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council, all city staff, members of the public, Victor Hernandez, Spanish interpreter. Buenas noches. Les queremos dejar saber a todos ustedes que pueden acceder lo que es el canal de Zoom por medio de seleccionar lo que es el mundo terráqueo que aparecerá al fondo de su pantalla y después seleccione lo que es el idioma en español. Muchas gracias. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Can we please have a roll call?
Councilmember Johnson?
Here.
Councilmember Nagengast?
Here.
Councilmember Penrose?
Here.
Vice Mayor Ruddick?
Here.
Mayor Brownstone?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Can we all please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you. Thank you. I move that we approve the agenda. Can I get a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, agenda is approved. I don't believe, do we have any proclamations and presentations?
Recording in progress.
Great, thank you. Any additional announcements, Matthew, of our upcoming events in November?
We'll actually cover that during CM updates,
great.
If that's okay.
Okay. Thank you. Report out from recent closed session.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The Council did meet in closed session earlier this evening to discuss three items, one item of anticipated litigation, one item public employee performance evaluation of City Manager Matthew Chittister, and a third item of existing litigation, the City of Half Moon Bay versus Granada CSD and Montera WSD. Nothing to report out from closed session.
Thank you. Appreciate the report. City Manager updates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have three very brief updates tonight. I believe the first will be with Irma Costa from the City Manager's office.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, and members of the public. Irma Costa, Economic and Community Vitality Division. And I just wanted to take a moment to update everyone on an important issue that we're seeing in our community. Due to the ongoing federal shutdown, more families are experiencing food insecurity. Local food banks and community organizations are reporting an increase in demand, and many are stretched thin to meet the need. These groups are doing incredible work, but they can't do it alone. So they are asking for volunteers and community support to help keep food on the table for our neighbors. If you're able, please consider volunteering your time or donating to a food pantry or meal program. On this screen, you can find some upcoming volunteer opportunities with some local organizations, and you can also find more information on our website about other opportunities for involvement. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Irma. I will take a brief moment to announce a couple of upcoming events. We're really excited. This Friday night will be the very first Diwali celebration in Half Moon Bay. Diwali is a Hindu tradition, the Festival of Lights, and we've worked with some of our community members who have been interested in doing this, and we're happy to support and partner with them as they kick off this new venture. The event will be this Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Maktucha Plaza in downtown Half Moon Bay. And there will be music, there will be henna tattoos, there will be arts and crafts for children. And really the goal is just to introduce some additional culture to our community. Interestingly enough, we've had an influx of Indian residents over the last several years that have started to create a new cultural community on the coast, and this is an opportunity to recognize some of our new neighbors. And I think it's a really cool way to also kick off the holiday season. It's a festival of lights, and as we know, we've got Nights of Lights coming up, and it's really cool, and it kind of kicks off following the Dia de los Muertos events that have been going on. So it's a cool opportunity. We're excited to be part of it, and we hope people will come and attend. I'll also share for folks, Friday is considered the kickoff of the holiday shopping season, and so many of our downtown businesses will be open late, hosting their own little parties in their stores, and they hope that for folks that are coming out to enjoy this event, they'll pop in and maybe start at least looking at what they want to buy for the holidays. Main Street is a great place to shop for the holidays, so want to make sure we plug our local businesses. Next Monday, Main Street and Kelly. Yeah? on Monday night, we will hold our annual Veterans Eve event. This is an opportunity for us to recognize our local veterans. It's a pretty low-key event. And it's really just an opportunity for us to recognize those in our community that have served our country and defended our freedoms and our liberties. And I think this is our fourth year doing it. And it's usually a small event, but really appreciated by our local vets and just an opportunity to recognize them. So that's from 6 to 7 p.m. on Monday night. City offices will be closed on Tuesday, so this is an opportunity before we go into the Veterans Day holiday to recognize those veterans. We'll have some cookies and treats and some warm drinks. It'll probably be cool as it has been, and we're looking forward to recognizing our veterans. And that's it.
Thank you, Matthew. Okay, there we go. So we're now going to open up our public forum, and that's open to everybody who's in the room and also people who are here remotely. If you are attending on Zoom and did wish to participate, please indicate by raising your hand on Zoom. Okay. So the way this works is, for those of you who know or don't know, each person has 3 minutes to speak. If there's language interpretation involved, that person there'll be 6 minutes total for the translation. And we ask that people do not applaud after someone speaks. It makes it more comfortable and safer for folks who might be coming up, especially for the first time, and they may be a little nervous. And so we just ask that people listen respectfully. And with that, we'll begin with our first speaker, who is Deborah Penrose.
Can you hear me now? Yes. Good evening. I'm speaking tonight as an elected official and as an angry and frightened citizen of the United States. We are losing our democracy and becoming an autocracy, a dictatorship. Countries that slide from democracy tend to follow similar patterns. Here are 12 markers that describe how the U.S. has regressed and is already becoming an autocracy. A political system limiting personal freedom, suppressing opposition, and controlling civil liberties by enforcing strict obedience at the expense of personal freedom. Autocrats stifle dissent and speech. Autocrats persecute political opponents. Autocrats bypass the legislature. Autocrats use the military for domestic control. Autocrats defy the courts. Autocrats declare national emergencies on false pretenses. Autocrats vilify marginalized groups. Autocrats control information and the news media. Autocrats try to take over universities. Autocrats create a cult of personality. Autocrats use power for personal profit. Autocrats manipulate the law to stay in power. The frightening fact is that the current government has regressed on all of these 12, and we have already lost what most of Americans hold dear, our individual freedom and our ability to elect and hold responsible our leaders. We no longer have the luxury of time. Now is the time to protest. It is critical that every elected official who swore to uphold the constitutions of the United States of America and of the state of California show that they are willing to defend them by speaking out against tyranny.
Thank you. Our next speaker, and actually apologies, I like to say who the next speaker is and then the one after that so they can be ready. So the next speaker will be Jennifer Moore, and she will be followed by Sandy Vella.
Good evening, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council, city staff, everyone here. My name is Jennifer Moore. I'm a local resident. I have a business right up the street. And I'm just here because I care about my community, and I have a lot of passion. As we move forward with the lease agreement, with our lease agreement involving Mercy and Alas, I strongly recommend that we engage in our own land use real estate attorney to represent the city's interest, not only with,
Jennifer, if you keep speaking in the mic, because that would be great.
Sorry, I moved it closer. Sorry.
Thanks.
Do you want me to start over? It is essential that the city staff take lead in developing and reviewing lease terms rather than relying on Mercy Housing to manage this process. Given the fact that Mercy Housing stands to generate substantial revenue from this project, it is reasonable for the city of Half Moon Bay to ensure that they also benefit appropriately. By maintaining control over the lease development and legal review, we can better safeguard the city's interest, ensure fair, equitable outcome to all parties involved. Additionally, with the city of Half Moon Bay's current structural deficit, I believe it would be prudent not to consider medical insurance for council members at this time. We need to commit to fiscal responsibility and demonstrate leadership managing limited public resources. Thank you for tonight.
Thank you, Jennifer. Our next speaker is Sandy Vella, who will be followed by Joaquin Jimenez.
Good evening, everybody. I have a couple comments. My name is Sandy Vella, 60-year coastal resident, living downtown Half Moon Bay. Please paint the Main Street Bridge. It's driving me crazy. I understand that February is a target date. If we could hold that, that would be great. You know, it's been peeling for far too long. So thank you for doing that. The other one's 555 Kelly. As it relates to 555 Kelly, the city of Half Moon Bay should really be the author of the 555 Kelly agreement being drawn up, not Mercy or Alas. And that way we could cleanly draw up our requirements on our paper and consider adding Mercy and Alas requests via an addendum, so it's nice and clean. Please open up the current draft agreement for review by the public. Public would like to suggest adding, removing, modifying terms, or we, you know, just maybe we can just submit them to you guys and you can collect them. And we'd like to do this before anything's signed. So get our comments early on. If there's a huge glaring issue, love to see it in advance. Please use outside counsel, specifically a real estate agent or land use attorney to review. We need legal specialists to advise us. I don't think we have the qualifications on our staff to really negotiate and even understand all the terms that are presented. And again, you know, I would strongly suggest don't approve the $1 lease for 99 years. I know we've all talked about this before. We can't afford this extraordinary and really outlandish request. We need to consider all Half Moon Bay interests and constituents when drawing up a long-term agreement that will impact all of us for years and years to come. And then finally, I want to thank you guys for helping to remove the long-term parked RVs on Main Street. So we noticed it, that's great. You know, they were an eyesore. Now it's gone. It's beautiful. If we can continue to tag RVs in Half Moon Bay that have not moved for 3 days, it'd be perfect. Stagnant RVs will become more and more of a problem in Half Moon Bay since San Francisco will be addressing stagnant RVs with a priority. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator. Our next speaker is Joaquin Jimenez, followed by Anita Reese.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members, city staff, and members of the public. Matthew, sorry, interrupt. Can you please share the flyers with the council members? November 22nd, music and vendor events, support local businesses or small businesses, music and vendors. Everybody's welcome. First event is going to be happening on Magdutra Plaza. I'm going to have a series of events happening, you know, in that area. The second event will be preparing for December 20th. This is a plan to help our local businesses, downtown association. Already I called Betsy Del Fierro to let her know about the event that is happening. I visited some of the shops downtown and left some of the flyers to promote this event. We have a lot of small businesses, you know, in our community that need our support. And just preparing them to come, you know, to downtown, you know, and have a great time. Public library plans to be there and have activities for the families and several of the vendors that we see usually see on Macon Main Street. Some of the other vendors that visit the area, you know, to different festivals. And this is just a plan, you know, to bring more people downtown. You know, we get a lot of visitors, you know, on the weekends, and we want them to enjoy visiting Half Moon Bay. The plan to have music, you know, activities, and make it fun. You know, make it fun, and hopefully our economy will benefit from it. You know, that is the whole idea, you know, visiting Half Moon Bay, and they get to know our downtown area. So please join us November 22nd, 12 to 5, you know, for music and vendors. And then when we're ready for in December, I will also come back, and I invite you to join us for December 20th. You know, same time, same location. All the permits are already in. I already applied for all the, make sure, you know, cover every angle to make sure everything's done the right way. Thank you.
Thank you, Joaquin. Anita Reese, thanks.
Hello, Anita Reese with the Unhoused on the Coast Outreach Program. It's a program of the Pacifica Resource Center, which is primarily funded by the San Mateo County Center on Homelessness. We provide outreach and engagement and case management services to unhoused folks on San Mateo County Coast from Pacifica to Pescadero with the goal of helping them return to housing. Outreach staff is available 7 days a week, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Saturday, Sunday, and holidays, 9 to 5, and we respond to outreach requests within 3 hours during that time. If you see someone living outside or in a vehicle, please call us at 650-452-6279 or email us at ucoutreach@pacresourcecenter.org. As of today, there are 32 individuals who are unhoused in Half Moon Bay, 4 encampments with 14 folks living in them and 19 others not in encampments. I will note that of the 4 encampments, only 2 are active. The other 2 are still noted as encampments, but they are empty. I want to thank City Manager Chittister and city staff and the Sheriff's Department for being partners in this work. For example, we've been able to move 2 folks living in motorhomes who are staying on Main Street. Both are on their way to housing. One has been matched with a housing subsidy and is currently looking for a rental. And the other, we were able to help them move their belongings out of their motorhome and provided incentive funds for them to give up their motorhome for good. The motorhome has since been towed and is off city streets. They are now reconnecting with family and searching for housing. So, again, I just want to thank you all for your partnership as we help unhoused folks in Half Moon Bay return to housing.
Thank you, Anita, and greatly appreciate the work your organization's doing. It's really having a positive impact, so thank you very much. I don't think we have anybody online. Just double check. And that's all our speakers today for public forum. Public forum is now closed. We will now move on to our consent calendar. Let's see, same situation, a couple of items here that we had last time. So first of all, is there anyone who wants to pull any item? I know Paul and Patrick, you will be abstaining from items 8A through 8C because you are not here to approve, though, to participate, so nothing to approve. I don't think there's anything else being pulled at this point, but I just want to double check before we go through it. So
it's actually eight B, C, and D.
Oh, sorry, that's right. I was looking at 8A. Thank you for that. Okay, that's right. Okay, so I'll do those separately. First, can I get a motion from the remaining 3 of us to approve? I'll move. I move that we approve items B, C, and D, which include approving the minutes of the January 19th, 2022 special session, the March 1st, 2022 regular meeting, and the minutes of the February 15th, 2022 special meeting. Can I get a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you. Okay, now for the rest of the consent calendar, including I move that we approve items 8E, approve the minutes of October 16th, 2025 special meeting, minutes of October 21st, 2025 special meeting, minutes of the October 21st, 2025 regular meeting, the treasurer's report for the quarter ending September 30th, 2025, and item 8I, adopting a resolution authorizing the city manager to execute a licensing agreement with the Seahorse Ranch for non-exclusive use of city property along Poplar Beach for a term ending December 31st, 2030, at an initial annual rate of $13,117 with a 3% annual increase throughout the term.
Move approval.
Second.
I think do we need a roll call on that, preferably?
Yes, it does involve money.
I'll have a roll call on that, please.
Councilmember Johnson? Calendar.
Absolutely, yes.
Councilmember Nagengast?
Yes.
Councilmember Penrose?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Reddick?
Yes.
Mayor Brownstone?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Great. Moving on to ordinances and public hearings. We're going to begin with item 9A, the introduction of an ordinance adding Chapter 7.65 Commercial Vitality Ordinance to the Half Moon Bay Municipal Code.
Great. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council, and Community. My name's Karen Decker. I'm your Economic and Community Vitality Manager. Welcome to the first reading of the Commercial Vitality Ordinance. This ordinance establishes standards for neglected and empty commercial storefronts. So currently, the city does not have a specific mechanism to regulate empty commercial properties, nor does it require specific standards around upkeep of commercial properties generally. We have heard feedback about empty and neglected storefronts in the past, but this year there was quite a bit of feedback starting at community listening sessions back in January and February, during council priority setting, meetings of the Downtown Association, and public comment from time to time. Given that feedback, staff conducted research and we did more of an in-depth discussion of this topic during the study session on October 7th. We know that empty or neglected storefronts pose things that are not helpful to Half Moon Bay. They contribute to urban decay, reduced property values, it's demoralizing for property owners that do comply. And there are safety and public health risks around cleanliness and whatnot. So the overall goal of the ordinance is intended to support active and attractive and safe commercial areas in Half Moon Bay. The proposed ordinance would add a new section, Section 7.65, to our municipal code. It would specify standards that don't currently exist, and it would require property owners to notify the city whenever a storefront is going to be vacant. At this time, there's not really a reason or an incentive for property owners to engage with the city. And so I think that by adding this requirement, not only would we not have to rely on just walking by or word of mouth whenever there's been churn in the city, but it necessitates a conversation between a property owner or the responsible party with city staff. It also establishes maintenance and display standards, which we haven't had before, and it provides the city with enforcement tools. Collaboration with property owners is really at the central, is really central to the ordinance. So whenever possible, staff, including our compliance officer, will opt for educating and collaborating instead of jumping right into accountability. But should there be situations where we may have some bad actors or those who are not incentivized by the other means, the city would have leverage to follow up. Many other cities have versions of this ordinance. Several use complex registration systems that more match a larger city with much larger staff. This approach is streamlined for Half Moon Bay's scale. Not introducing multiple forms or new software to complicate compliance was important to staff and stakeholders, and staff received quite a bit of input. We engaged with other cities that participate in economic development associations for which the city participates. And so there was a lot of institutional knowledge and collective wisdom from jurisdictions who have already tried and implemented this, which was really helpful. We also chatted with downtown groups. Some local businesses were really generous with the amount of time that they took to sit down and chat with me about their concerns and their ideas. Commercial real estate representatives. So really appreciate those folks who took their time to weigh in on this topic. Public notice was also published in the Daily Journal on October 24th, which is a requirement of this process. And just back to that study session that I had mentioned earlier. So just a general summary, there was overall support for this concept. It's something that council has asked for, the community has asked for. And that session afforded us an opportunity to hear from additional community members and get guidance from the council. In addition to that general support of the ordinance, there was discussion about honoring the uniqueness of each storefront and avoiding overly prescriptive regulations, while also calling for more specificity around the role of the compliance officer. Council members also emphasized the importance of encouraging merchants and business operators to really take pride and ownership in maintaining their storefronts. As a result of feedback throughout this research and specifically that study session, staff went back to the draft, and this is just a summary of some of the key revisions that were made, and they generally fell under this umbrella of cleanliness and maintenance. So following the study session, staff revised the ordinance to reflect that feedback, and in particular, staff added provisions to address these concerns around commercial properties. So clean awnings and legible exterior lettering. We added more specific language around dumpsters and trash cans, that they must remain enclosed, that no trash or waste is left outside of receptacles, and that regular cleaning and maintaining of exteriors and interiors is important. We also provided clarification around standards. The ordinance defines specific upkeep and maintenance obligations for commercial properties, supported by clear enforcement guidelines to ensure consistency. The ordinance also references compliance with the code, the city code generally, but we also intentionally pointed to specific parts of state health and safety codes. There are some parts of that code that are irrelevant because they apply. State code that give our compliance officer a lot of leverage in terms of maintaining standards for commercial properties, and it provides property owners an extensive list of what those requirements are. Staff also included examples around the section of the ordinance that talks about empty storefronts. And we did this to provide property owners with options for temporary displays in street-facing windows that have been vacant for more than 90 days. The intent is to encourage storefronts to appear active and visually attractive while minimizing regulatory burden on property owners and limiting the need for extensive staff involvement. So compliance with having an empty storefront that remains active could look like simulating that a business is inside, could be a desk with some flowers. We could point them in the direction of working with downtown organizations that have maps, the History Association with QR codes. I was just chatting with the superintendent of Cabrillo Unified, and Dr. Miramontes is happy to put staff in touch with the high school or the middle school to bring in student art from a local level. So there's a lot of cost-effective ways to activate spaces that need not be cumbersome or expensive. So next steps, if council introduces the ordinance this evening, and if any revisions are modest, in which I'm sure Catherine could provide guidance, then this would proceed to a second reading, and then this would take effect 30 days after that adoption. I'm happy to answer any clarifying questions before I turn it over to the mayor to open up the public hearing. Thank you.
Clarifying questions from council.
So, Karen, the report's
council
really good.
Councilmember Johnson.
Sorry about that. The report's really good.
Thank you.
It's kind of what I was drawn into months ago with Betsy at It's Italia. She actually is the one that brought this forward to me, the planters, this walkways, the leaves, the printer's building, the sign's going to fall down and hit somebody. Can I put some kids' drawings on the building so it looks better, because we're doing all these events. So she really brought this forward, and this is what we got now. But I'm a little worried here because I'm getting texts from her that she didn't really get a chance to put a bite of the apple. Did you get a chance to talk to her about this one? Did she see this and review it?
This was introduced to at the Downtown Association meetings, and then copies of the ordinance was provided to the Chamber and Downtown Association for distribution among their membership. I'm still happy to sit down with any business owner that wants to do a deeper dive. I didn't hear particularly from her, but it's not too late, and I'm happy to do that.
Because they do have a meeting, and Matthew, maybe you can help me, because I don't remember exactly, and I know Paul's gone to it, I've gone to it. They have like a meeting at It's Italia, I think it's Tuesdays at 9 in the morning or something.
It's one Thursday a month. Yeah.
I would really like for that chance for that meeting to happen where they can dissect this.
Well, that meeting isn't a place where we would go through an ordinance like this, but
right.
That's the meeting that Karen was referring to where it was discussed several times. So
okay. You were at the It's Italia in the morning, 9 in the morning, talking about some of this stuff?
Yes, and whenever the concept of the ordinance came up, it was met with great enthusiasm. So, there weren't particular sticking points that were hashed out in detail, but general support of it, and the actual ordinance itself was given to kind of the leadership for distribution.
So were they able to read what you had, or were you just taking input?
I don't know who read it, but I was happy to take input from anybody at the meeting, and it was just really general support. There wasn't particular pivoting around any sticking points, but again, that's okay. If there are concerns or ideas that still need to be raised, you know, I'm happy to do that.
No, I guess
the draft ordinance went to the different organizations to distribute amongst their membership, so we're not sure if it made it to the individual business owners directly. Obviously, with Betsy, we can just reach out directly to her.
I'm concerned for Betsy and everybody. I'll just be clear, because my phone just blew up that she's not, you know, it's not 100% on this. And I believe that,
okay.
I think our merchants really need to be all the little stuff. You did a great job. I worry about merchants. As a business owner myself, I worry about that.
There was also a text that went out. There's an opt-in for merchants that is managed through the chamber, and so a text went out in anticipation of the study session, and I'm on that thread, and I received that text, and I think Matthew did as well. So any downtown businesses or chamber members that opt into that, that was just another way to get the word out that the study session was happening, that the ordinance was available to view, and that the study session was a great opportunity for public comment. You know, tonight, this first reading is another opportunity. So, I'm sorry to hear that, but
it's
happy
all good.
To engage.
This is the process. I mean, I'm just sharing. The other thing I'd like to just pull in, because I don't think we have it mentioned, but just the benches that we have on Main Street, like there was one that I actually grabbed because the downtown beautification owned it, and I was told, if you want to clean it, clean it. So I went and cleaned it. I power washed it. But there are benches you don't power wash, and there are some that we can that are owned by the beautification, if I'm not mistaken. But I think that would be something that every once a year, they're teak, you power wash, and you put some sealant on there just so that they look nice and bright and clean, and there was graffiti on them, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I think that's, it's just generalized language. That's kind of what Betsy brought forward in here. There needs to be a little bit more definition on neat and orderly. So I think that's one of the comments you put forward.
And if I can, Mr. Mayor, if I could jump in, there's a second thing that we'll be working on, which is really policies around street furniture and street, you know, the artwork, flowers, flower pots, benches, all of that. We're going to wait to really tackle that until after the November 18th special meeting, where we'll hear from the fire district about all the new fire laws, because that is going to affect that. So something we were working on concurrently, and we put a pause on until we get through that. So I think it's a little different than what we're trying to address here with this ordinance. It's a separate issue that we'll address in a different way, the furniture piece.
I just want to clarify around what Patrick was saying. So you're saying that the chamber did get a copy of this. Is that right?
I sent an initial draft to leadership from the Downtown Association and the Chamber, just asking them to share it with their members and provide any feedback.
Right. And that's the same draft we're looking at here?
That was the draft leading into the study session.
Oh, okay, so not this one. Okay. Well, now everyone has it, and great. Please have Betsy and others, you know, contact Carol.
I actually contacted her on Saturday when I started reading this, so she was okay. Aware of it, and I gave her a heads up. You need
great.
To get going on this and read it. So I'm doing what I can, but I just want to make sure everybody's involved.
Sounds good. Thank you for bringing that up. Any other? Paul?
Thank you. A couple of things in here just to clarify, which may make a difference when we deliberate later. I noticed about sidewalk repair. Are property owners responsible to repair the sidewalks in front of their businesses?
The landlords.
Or landlords or property owners, just like we do in residential areas?
That's correct.
Okay, so that would require getting a permit. And then who determines when a sidewalk needs to be repaired? Is that a city function?
Todd, do you want to speak to that? Todd Seeley's our interim public works director and has been our public works superintendent and been dealing with maintenance of sidewalks for many years.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. So downtown sidewalks, we have a vendor that we send out once a year just to do an overall assessment of the condition of the sidewalks downtown. Based on that, we'll target the most problematic areas first with the funding that we have. The rest of the areas are primarily addressed through grinding or scarifying, depending on what methods we have available. And as far as I am aware, I'm not aware of the city actually making any business owners downtown pay for sidewalk replacement. It's kind of a function that we've been taking care of on their behalf for as long as I've been here anyways.
Yeah, I believe the only time we would have a property owner do the work on those sidewalks as if there was something that they had done to create an issue. But the street trees are ours, and most of the issues we have the sidewalk were based right. on that.
Well, I was trying to figure out if, because I know residential areas aren't property owners responsible.
Correct.
Does it distinguish between commercial and residential in the code? Do you know?
I don't believe so. We can look into that further. I'm not aware of a difference in the code. But that's certainly something we can look at.
Just curious. Yeah. And that would be the same for, like, cleaning sidewalks. Do they have to come to the city for a permit to do that, or how does that work?
Cleaning sidewalks?
I guess depending on the type of cleaning that's going to be
so
done.
It's a little more challenging with the water runoff regulations that we deal with as far as maintenance operations goes. Pressure washing the sidewalks needs to be done by a VASMA-certified pressure washer. So basically, it's reclaiming the water that they're using for their operation. We've looked in with Karen. We've looked at some numbers, and I think the numbers we got informally it was about $8,000 a month to do like just the downtown core. It's an expensive service for sure. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're up against right there.
Right. So I don't know if that's – who decides when a sidewalk needs to be cleaned? I don't know.
Just want a quick clarifying question. There's a difference between power washing and just taking a hose, right, and hosing down a sidewalk, or is it the same in terms of what you're talking about? Because
I think there's probably some gray area there. The pressure washing actually does get – more material up, and that's what the water, the regulatory bodies are worried about getting into the storm drain system,
yeah.
right? Is okay. getting that deep-rooted filth and oil and grime up off the sidewalks and letting it flow into the storm drains. Hosing okay. it down, I mean, if we're talking just about, if we got a call that there was a pile of vomit, or, you know, if someone vomited on Main Street, we're going to hose it down, right? That's what we're going to do. If there's human waste on Main Street, we're going to hose it down. That's what we're going to do, right? So, pressure washing is probably a different threshold than we're talking about here, but there is probably some gray area in that.
I think there's a big difference. I mean, I hose down some of my sidewalks or backyard, but man, if I use a power washer, wow, what a difference it makes. So it's like night and day in terms of the intensity of the power wash. So I would just hope someone could at least just hose something down and just make that sort of differentiation. Okay, thanks for starting.
Sure.
On that note, because we're talking about cleaning awnings, so then are we in detail of how we're going to clean those awnings? Because, I mean, I went downtown and I saw somebody hosing down the awning, and I took a video of it. It was pretty impressive how much dirt was coming off and how nice it looked. But then now you guys are saying no water, no nothing. So how are we going to clean the awnings?
I don't want to speak for Matthew, but I think that's probably part of the discussion that he was talking about for the November 18th meeting with regards to fire codes and what is going to be allowed on Main Street with the update to the fire codes. We're not sure what the guidance is going to be on that. So the awnings could very well disappear. We're not 100% sure yet at this point.
And I think based on your questions, I think there's some level of detail that the current ordinance does not get into. And we're going to have to determine, do we need to get into that level of detail in this ordinance, or can it be that when someone needs to do this work, they need to come and talk to us about what's appropriate? And unfortunately, that's probably the better approach, because if we try to get too specific, things change all the time. We're going to be updating this ordinance constantly. So there's probably a happy balance there. So we'll research some of the questions that you've asked, and we may need to make some either clarifications of the ordinance or just language that references how people can get information about what are the current practices and best practices for doing some of this work.
And then I have one more thing for Todd and Matthew, there are on Main Street in front of the storefronts, right where the trees are, there is cracking that's lifting. I was walking with Keith near and just shooting the breeze with him, and he's like, stops, and he goes, this is a lawsuit ready to happen. And then we go across the street to Acuna's, same thing over there. There's cracks that have been ground down, which you guys are doing. That's great. But they are significant, and their array is pretty good. So we might want to assess that every once in a while and know how tall or how high a crack is supposed to be before it's, you know, in danger of somebody trip and fall.
Typically, anything above an inch, we're going to want to address immediately. Anything less than that, we kind of look at it. The reason that there's still a significant amount of lift downtown is that we just got our contractor under contract for this year's round of doing it. So we expect them to be mobilizing in the next week to actually go out and start working in the downtown area. There's a ton of areas that we've identified. It's actually fairly reasonable priced for the service that we're going to get, and we expect to get quite a bit of it done this year. So expect to see that change in the next month or so. We should be done with everything.
Paul, did you finish? Yeah. Just keep it going. Yeah.
Can you tell me, when you work on the lift, what are you working on? Are you working on things below 1 inch?
Anything above an inch goes to the top of the priority.
Yeah, I know, but what about, there any minimum amount that you are?
I mean, really about a half an inch is kind of where we're at. It's all based on the ADA codes, and I don't have those in front of me right now, but basically the most problematic areas, the vendor comes out and does the assessment and gives us a list top to bottom. These are the areas you guys need to focus at first. We expend all of our funds on those areas and get those areas done. And then we start going on the areas that still are in compliance for ADA, but could potentially get worse because of the tree root lift and stuff that we have going on in those areas.
Thank you.
And maybe you can address this next one too. I noticed in here is about dumpsters and, you know, trash receptacles, having them locked between different hours. Is that something that's required now? No,
it's not. And there's some implications with this in working with Republic.
Yes, I mean, is there a cost to this then? Does Republic charge to do this?
There is some sort of a cost. Do we know what that is?
Just at first glance, I would have to think there would be a significant labor burden associated with them for them to go and lock it. I know that they're not staffed up to handle that kind of stuff, and they would have to add a staff person or get someone to come in and do it on overtime.
So they have a fee that they charge businesses that lock their dumpsters.
So do the businesses know this? I mean, I just throwing this out. I mean, I'm not. Yeah. I just, these are questions that I, you know, come up with real quick. And then the other was, oh, it says the enforcement mechanisms available in Title IV of this code to remedy violations. So Title, what exactly is the Title IV tells you what to do or gives you the process to do something?
I could take a stab at this one. Title IV is the code enforcement chapter. And so it's basically just incorporating all the tools that the city already has for code enforcement, whether it's administrative enforcement or civil enforcement, criminal enforcement. They're all incorporated to enforce this new ordinance.
Right, because this had nothing in here about fines or
correct. Yeah.
Recording on properties. But this, so that's why it gets referred to
yes.
do what Title IV says to do, and then that's the process that's in there for that?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, and then one other quick one. You had mentioned you talked to some cities that had they've gone through some trials and tribulations, you know, trying to set up ordinances and what worked, what didn't work. Did you get any sense, and maybe it's reflected in here, an item or two that they thought was don't do it or something that really was challenging for them?
The registration process being extensive. The amount of code enforcement officers, plural, at the jurisdictions that had more detailed requirements around registrations, the databases, the tracking, the staff capacity, that was not fun from a city staff perspective, and it got to be labor intensive and expensive. But, you know, those cities in particular weren't located in coastal zones that had as much process as we do. They had much more active commercial and industry areas, you know, manufacturing. They're just, it's mm-hmm. just not apples to oranges. Uh-huh. But when I looked at smaller cities like Patterson and certain aspects of Santa Cruz, but Santa Cruz is substantially larger, there was much more commonality and just the feel and the culture and social ethos of the town seemed to fit Half Moon Bay better in terms of scale and capacity.
Okay. So, and we tend to focus on Main Street. Is this only intended for Main Street? So will this be like in, I never get the names correct, like Safeway Shopping Center?
Strawflower Village, and yes.
So
this is intended to be citywide, so commercial,
so something
first
there
floor.
Even.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Not just
do they all know this is coming too?
I mean, I wouldn't say every property owner knows about it. It's much easier to flyer and engage the merchants, mm-hmm. but more often than not, the business operator is not the property owner.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I just want to, because would this go to the Ritz even? Or
yeah. Any commercial business will have to
golf course
abide by
even?
This. Yeah.
Huh, interesting. So, okay, those are my questions.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other council members have more clarifying questions? Do we have any public comment? I don't think so. Nobody online. Okay. Public comment going once, twice, three times. It's been opened. We're now closed.
I just want to clear up the record that the public hearing has been opened.
Public comment is now open. Okay. Nothing online, nothing in the room. Public comment is closed. Now have a council discussion.
Yeah, there's nothing in the ordinance right now about clean windows. And that's a concern to me. Because the two properties that I know of on Main Street that are the most offensive have dirty windows. And I would like to see us at least consider making some statement about having clean windows.
We did talk about clean windows internally, community development and the city manager's office. You know, we are complaint-based, so that could be manageable, but I know that there was some concern that if that was actually an expectation that that could be burdensome for staff in terms of monitoring for that, trying to look for that, enforcing that. But do any of my colleagues want to weigh in on that, or do we not feel strongly about that? Because we had discussed it. I recall that from feedback you provided during the study session, Councilmember Penrose.
Joe's here, so let's have him.
Okay.
Hello. Can you guys hear me? Thank you, Mayor and council members. So to the question that you asked, is this kind of burdensome? I'm sorry, mispronouncing. It is, only because it becomes very subjective over what is dirty and what's not, and like what is the threshold for us to be able to do any type of enforcement. So essentially, with me being the only enforcement officer, quote unquote, it would be like a daily task for me to walk down Heritage Main Street, or even since we're encapsulating Strawflower and everything else, to be like, what's the threshold for a dirty window? And what can we do?
How is that different from the threshold from a dirty sidewalk? I mean, to me, it's the same thing. You know, somebody has a piece of paper on their sidewalk. I could call that dirty, or I could say, gee, there's just a piece of paper there. So I don't know how you enforce something like that. But I do know that what we want is an ordinance that covers a situation where somebody doesn't clean their windows for 6 months.
Absolutely, and I'm not.
And I don't know how we do that.
That's my point. I agree with you 100%. The thing is, where is the threshold, and where do we, like, what is the bar that we raise through this so that there is something that is enforceable, like a dirty sidewalk? What is that threshold? What is the threshold for a dirty window so that we can actually hold somebody accountable rather than just being subjective?
I understand. I think that's something that we need to consider, though, in the ordinance, not just leave it out because it's a difficult thing to look at. And
I guess I think what I'm hearing is, you know, if we look at section 7.65.070, all commercial properties exteriors, we talk about maintaining neat and orderly landscaping, building exteriors, clean awnings where permissible, and clear exterior lettering when used. Can there just be a reference to doorways and windows? And then we'll have to deal with that subjectivity later. But I think it's implied here, and I think what you're looking for is just clearly call that out so that
people
can't say, well, you don't say windows
it.
In the ordinance, so I don't feel like I have to deal with that. Is that
right? Exactly.
So I think we can look more closely at that, but is there a reason why we couldn't just call out windows where we're calling out other parts of a building exterior?
Yeah, and I would argue that the windows are already covered, but we should call them out.
Okay.
As to Councilmember Penrose's concern, and
it's one of the main things between the public and the space is the window. That's what they look at. That's the first thing they see. They're not looking at the landscaping nearly as much, or the awnings. They're looking right at the window. That's at eye level. So that's why I think it's important to call it out in some way.
Yeah.
Certainly don't want to make things burdensome for anybody, but...
Yeah, and to my second point, I think that we can include some language that provides some kind of objective threshold that's easier... easier to enforce than actually quite a number of those sort of subjective elements. So not just windows, but also sidewalks and
yeah. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
I really appreciate the approach of making it consistent with our scale and trying to simplify it. It still is way more than I anticipated that we were going to take on. Like, I was mostly interested in, you know, vacant storefronts. And it's gone beyond that. And I do have kind of a problem with the sort of subjective nature of a lot of the descriptors in it. And I think that can cause real problems for enforcement. It puts our enforcement compliance officer in kind of a tough spot. To have to make those calls. So I think if we're going to have an expanded approach to, like, upkeep and things, I think we need to at least have a companion guidance document that, you know, relieves the compliance officer of some of the burden of subjective interpretation. And maybe you use photos. Maybe this guidance document has photos. Here's a dirty window. You can't see the merchandise or something like that. Here's a dirty sidewalk. But I think photos are the way to go because there's less room for interpretation because most reasonable people can agree what's dirty, you know, what's clean, and that sort of thing. But I think you need photos. But bottom line, what I'm saying is you need some sort of guidance document to make Joe's job easier, to not put him or the city in a position where you have multiple interpretations flying around, or, you know, people, you know, make charges of influence peddling. He likes you better than me, and, you know, mine's not that dirty. I don't think we should, you know, be involved in that sort of stuff. You know, and it requires ultimately, like, the city manager, the community development director step in, maybe the city attorney. So it's more than I thought we were going to do. And I think because of that, it introduces some peril in a small town where everybody wants to feel good about each other and, you know, neighboring businesses and things like that. So, you know, we might, you know, take another look at this, or at least create a, you know, companion guidance document. So you take, you know, some of that subjective interpretation out of there and thereby diffuse tension and stress and free up the compliance officer for enforcing other things in town for which he is responsible. So I think we maybe have bitten off more than we can chew. It's just my observation. But given that, I think you came up with a reasonable approach that sort of works for our community, and it was thoughtfully done. I just think that there's still some issues here that creates issues for our staff and gets us into a battle of interpretations.
So. Yeah, and I hate to use this word, but I'm going unintended consequences. And some along the lines what you're talking about, when you leave room for interpretation, what I worry is what I may think is quaint and rule, somebody else may call that junk or it's a hazard. And I know we have some eclectic properties in town, which I think are wonderful. I think that's why folks come over the hill to come here to see that, whether it's a sign on a piece of plywood that you can get something. But I think it's kind of our character, you know, that I think makes it attractive for folks to come here, you know, and especially we're not just the beach, you know, we're a whole other community here. So I agree if we're going to have a lot in here. And I'm a little uncomfortable that all the businesses really realize what's happening here. There's a lot in here that I want them really to know, you know, careful what you wish for. Here it is. It's coming. Now, I can't imagine some cities that do even more than this, what they must have. They must have a whole department that has to deal with that. But I would want to make sure the businesses that all agree with this and even these shopping centers, because I've seen some things in some of those shopping centers that you're going to maybe have to address, whether it's the front or back of them. Because they're visible to the public and they have public walkways there. So I just think maybe we need to tweak a little more and just make sure businesses, are you really, this is coming. We're going to have this.
And maybe whittle some of the stuff out ultimately. But, you know, one thought I had is because of these sorts of issues, like if we could make it maybe a pilot project, or, you know, put a sunset on it, like, for 2 years or something. You know, build some experience with it that'll show us, you know, is this workable, is it not? I don't know, but I think it's a lot to take on.
Mr. Mayor, if I might respond, I think these are really great comments. And really, as the scope of this changed, exactly for the reasons you're describing. Because I'll use an example. Everybody's familiar with it. We had this glorious donation bin on that property line between 7-Eleven and Rite Aid. And it's been an issue for many, many years. And Joe has spent more time than you would ever want to know trying to enforce that under our current code. Because everybody agrees it's a problem. Everybody agrees that it's ugly and it's a problem for our community and a nuisance. And enforcing that has been a nightmare. And luckily, through a lot of work from lots of people in this room, and especially Joe, we finally got rid of it. What we're trying to prevent is that. Years and years of fighting to get rid of something because our current code doesn't address these things directly. So I think to your point, that's why we've expanded this beyond just the vacant storefronts. The key is, how do we thread that needle, keep it objective, and actually accomplish what we're trying to, which is ease of enforcement, clarity of enforcement, and property owners and businesses know what's expected and can just the goal is for people to be able to read it and comply without us ever having to get involved. Right?
And I think the key word you just said was nuisance. And I'm just guessing here, but it seems to me that it's easier to define a nuisance than it is like clean and orderly, right?
But I think that's been the problem.
Yeah.
Because everybody would agree that that particular issue was a nuisance.
Right.
And we spent years trying to use that very subjective term mm-hmm. as the only means we had to enforce it. And we finally got there with help from the property owner and the business right. that was allowing it to be there.
The thing about nuisances, though, is it's easier to establish and levy fines and collect them because you're making it more like civil code sort of stuff, you know, where it becomes a health and safety issue. So I think that's the dividing line. It's like, what would we like to have because it's nice and attractive for our tourists, but what is a nuisance? And what buckets do you put those in terms of code sections and all that stuff? And I don't bring all this up to denigrate the work because I think if we were going to do something like this, you know, is good for us. It's just that I'm just making the point that I think it's too much. So.
Is this going to address the issue of the 7-Eleven and the Rite Aid parking?
It's been, parking I can address that right now. I just drove by it today.
Yeah.
So the bin is gone, the donation bin. And that parking lot looks beautiful. There's no homeless person there. It's all cleaned up. The other garbage bins are out there. I was actually, wow. In fact, I want to say something positive that has actually been done. It's nice. You could show movies on that wall.
Great.
But the answer is, the goal of this ordinance is to make it easier for us to maintain this incredible state we're finally in, because as we know, it could change tomorrow morning. We could leave this meeting right now and we're back to square one, and it's a really tough process right now. This ordinance, and it sounds like there's some things we need to do to further refine it, is intended to make that easier to continue to maintain. That's part of the goal. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, I started attending the Downtown Association meetings. And I'm thinking, you know, I like to see sometimes something that looks like in between, like a little bit of community self-enforcement or, you know, help. So maybe there's a way where, you know, folks from Downtown Association could take turns, have some conversations about what's looking okay or not, perhaps making some recommendations to store owners, you know, to clean things up, do they need help, you know, what's going on. And before anything then gets sent to Joe for enforcement, or whoever's responsible for enforcement, have the Downtown Association, you know, be a little bit less, you know, there's a fine line between over-regulating and creativity and everything having to look the same. And we pride ourselves on, you know, well, we like this small town kind of feel. What does that mean? And a lot of it is some individuality, you know. And believe me, there's cities in this country that you go down, everything looks pretty darn uniform. And God knows in Europe, countries, God help you, if your lawn is an inch over the grass limit. I mean, really heavy, heavy regulation. And I'd rather see, you know, helpful support versus, you know, and just address the outliers, you know, the people just simply refuse to think that there's anything, you know, wrong going on, and asking if, you know, they might need some help. And I think we got the kind of people in the downtown community who would be really good with that approach, you know, so.
And I'll also just say that's the intent of this as well. This is not so that we go door to door and every property is like, you got to change this, you got to clean up that. It's for those outliers that everybody knows, everybody can tell you which buildings we're talking about, where our current enforcement has not been able to address those issues. It's to give us some teeth for the people that will not comply. That's what this is all about.
Yes.
This is not about to 90% of our property owners, to 90% of our businesses, this will not change anything for them. It's right. For the outliers that have been egregious and ongoing issues for us, to give us some teeth to really go after some of them.
That makes sense. Yeah, great. So do you have enough direction? Is there any other direction or...
I would like to ask a clarifying question. So in regards to, you know, subjective descriptions, and there are several places in the ordinance where it says neat and orderly intentionally, because the intention is to be understood by a layperson, but for sort of a really detailed list, that's where the Title IV, that's where the state code comes in, that's where the existing code comes in. That was always the intention, to have those detailed lists provide the compliance officer with leverage should there be an extreme case where we need to point to the law and say, this is what we mean by flammable, this is what we mean by, you know, yeah, dilapidated. So there are some subjective descriptions, but it's by design, because a lot of the feedback was to not be overly prescriptive. So would it be acceptable to largely keep the key provisions and the ordinance as is, but to use the city's website on this topic to provide photos, to provide the form, to provide, because that is all would happen if this was adopted. But I don't know if the ordinance is the best place to do that. Saratoga in particular did a really great job after they passed their ordinance of just being so layperson friendly on their website and really illustrating what some of these sticking points were without having to change the technical language. Would that be acceptable?
I would support this if we have a companion effort to clarify people, like, and for guidance on the web, or a, you know, a pretty book or something that just, and you probably can't take pictures of local businesses for privacy reasons, but maybe illustrations, you know, but mm-hmm. So yeah, I can support that, and then we'll see how it goes. I mean, I think it's an okay start. And
similar to, you remember that building standards thing, and we have that booklet. Yeah. Now we might not want to be taking pictures of our local businesses. That's a good point. Doesn't mean you can't go to some other cities without showing the name of a place and say, you know, this is not so good, this is too funky, you know, and give people a chance to see, oh, this is, you know, what you can do to make it slightly, you know, nicer and stuff like that. And, yeah, so that would be great. And I think just one last thing, Karen. I realize that not everybody sees the announcements of what we'll be covering on a particular meeting. So in terms of the most recent copy of this ordinance, would you mind resending it to the Chamber and to the Downtown Association?
Sure.
And say this is a work in progress.
Of course.
You know, we realize not everyone may have seen the latest, you know, edition. So it could get sent out to everyone, you know, so it doesn't, they don't have to come to you. You just say, please
right.
Contact Karen if you have some ideas or don't understand something, that would be great, and we'll just keep
Robert?
That going.
Yeah, I'd like to say something.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's smart to be overly prescriptive in terms of the ordinance, but I don't want to be relying on the city's website. If we are going to be putting it like this, we want people to understand what it means, and that means the city has to take a proactive stance and reach out in some way, and I don't know how to do it, but reach out to the businesses, the vendors, the landlords, and say, this is what our ordinance is all about.
Sure.
I don't want to rely on the website. People don't go to the website.
Agreed. Yeah, I think the website is not enough, and I think there needs to be really proactive engagement around this. You know, my team with the Streetscape master plan outreach, I think, is a good example. We can do flyering. We can walk door to door. If we have a city communication that's a hard copy again, like Currents, in Currents, I think that there are several mechanisms. A member of my team, Irma, is actually drafting a business resource guide. This could be a helpful chapter for property owners. You know, so I don't think it stops here. I think if it gets adopted, that's just the starting point of spreading the information in multiple mediums, because absolutely, how many frequent flyers are going to check the city manager office page on a website under a
right.
government umbrella?
Right.
So understood.
And this is a great opportunity for, with something like this, with an ordinance, there should always be, you know, an FAQs, an ongoing FAQs. And I think that's a great role for the chamber to help us, because they've got, you know,
sure.
they're downtown, they'll have their ear to the ground and say, yeah, what's some more FAQs you're hearing that we can maintain and would be a living document
Absolutely.
To explain the ordinance. That's right, because like you said, there's things always changing in regulations, you know, from the fire department, all that stuff. So,
And you know, I like the word vitality, but I also like the concept of talking about community pride. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something everybody who lives here can relate to and does business here. It's a matter of pride, not just, you know, increasing business and making business more successful. It's, you know, we want to take pride and care in our community. So if we can weave those concepts in, you know, I think that's good.
Prop 50 passed.
All right. What was the percentage?
FYI.
Yes, no, but in my mind. Okay. We're ready before. We're going to take a break before.
I want to make sure that staff has the direction that we need. So I'm just checking with Karen right now. I think. So this is a public hearing, which we have to notice per, you know, government code. And there's been some direction given in terms of the ordinance itself. And I guess I just wanted to flag that council would have the option of continuing the public hearing to a date certain to allow staff to make adjustments to the ordinance, potentially work on the handbook administrative
yeah.
supplements. I think there would be some cost savings to continue the public hearing. I don't know how much it costs, but Maggie could probably tell me how to notice these things.
$720 per notice. $720 per notice to notice a public hearing.
So continuing is cheaper?
Yes. Yes, as opposed to tabling it and then just bringing it back.
If we know when we want to bring it back. That's the key.
If you want to bring it back.
Yeah. We'll bring it back for sure.
Do you bring it back before the holidays or after the holidays? I mean, to me, that's where we start getting into running out of meetings.
Well, I don't think we necessarily have to have a guidance doc, you know, for us to adopt this ordinance. We want to give direction that we want that. But, I mean, I haven't recommended any specific changes. I haven't heard any specific changes anybody's asked for up here. So,
well, originally, you're going to bring this back for a second thing, November, our next meeting in November.
So if the changes requested, you know, I think one specific change we heard is referencing windows. We'd probably want to put a reference to the fact that there will be guidance docs available. If that was enough and you were ready to, you know, approve this tonight for a second reading, that would go on consent on the next council meeting on the 18th. And then it would take effect 30 days later. So the question is there further discussion needed for this in the future? That's really the question here.
I'd rather not do a first reading tonight. I mean, I would even the next meeting, if that's okay, but I really want to make sure the businesses understand, and there's costs in here. So lock your dumpster is a cost. I want to make sure they know that, which I think it's a good thing because it benefits everybody. I think that's, you were talking about community pride, but I think that's something that, you know, we're all in this together, I think is what we're trying to say. We're here to help. You know, I just am from the government, here to help. But, I mean, we are, and trying to address the concerns that we've heard from the business community.
Right. So if we want to come back for further discussion, November 18th is not an option. That's the special joint meeting. It's very focused on other things. So it would either be December 2nd or December 16th in this calendar year.
And then continue the public hearing?
We would continue the public hearing to one of those dates, and we just need to decide.
Yeah.
So is December 2nd, Karen, from what we're hearing, is we could do that work and bring it back December 2nd without any issue?
We could bring it back. I mean, just to be frank, when I go back and I look at this iteration, I know neat and orderly, there's room to add specificity around windows, so that's clear. I'm not hearing any big pivot around key policy. And then in section 080, the very last bullet says, establish and enforce any administrative policies necessary for the implementation and enforcement of this chapter, which to me is the majority of the feedback that I've heard tonight.
Yeah.
So if we did do another first reading, I don't have terribly new things to introduce. I think that the way that it's written covers the concerns that I heard, with the understanding that after adoption, we're not done, right? There's still education, there's still research around Republic. I'm happy to follow any direction, but as your staff at the next public hearing, I won't have substantive changes to share.
Yeah, so if we continue this to, let's say, December 2nd, what are we looking for between that? It sounds like continue to notify businesses of the ordinance and some of the implications to them. At that point, we would collect more feedback. We'd continue the public hearing on the 2nd, and then hopefully at that point, put it forward for the first
and,
reading.
I would recommend, to Kristlyn, have some meetings, the chamber can have in the evenings and stuff, or, where people from, business owners can come and talk about it, or bring in the landlords, whatever she can do to get some more feedback.
The shopping center people, I think.
I mean, those would probably be our meetings, not the chamber's meetings, because it's our ordinance that we're trying to adopt. Obviously, we do it in coordination with the chamber and the downtown association. But if we want to do outreach meetings like that, that's really on us. No one else is going to do that for us.
That they can't pull together a listening session.
They could help us with that, but it would be ours, not theirs. They could collaborate with us on that.
Okay.
All right. So we're looking at continuing to the 2nd. You're looking for some additional outreach and notification to property owners and business operators, and then we'll bring it back on the 2nd for hopefully kind of a wrap-up discussion. Yeah.
That would include Joe's input too on being able to enforce, and he's involved also.
Oh yeah, the community development's very involved in this process from the beginning. Thank you.
And we need a motion and a second and a vote to continue to a date certain to December 2nd.
Move that we continue the public hearing on ordinance adding Chapter 7.65 Commercial Vitality Ordinance to the Half Moon Bay Municipal Code to the regular meeting of December 2nd, 2025.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? Motion passed. We're going to take a 5-minute break and then move on to item 9B. reopening our session. Thanks, everybody. We're going to move on to item 9B, adoption of the 2025 editions of the California Building Standards Code. We'll have a staff report, and this is regarding electrification.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members, staff and public, little public that we have left. Thank you for having us here tonight. My name is Ben Corrales. I'm the permit technician in the building division, and with me is also our chief building official, Keith Weiner. We are here to introduce the 2025 California Building Code update. As most of you already know, the California Building Code is updated every 3 years. It was published originally this past July for comments and feedback, and it will come back for adoption after adoption. It will become effective on January 1st, 2026. The most significant change that we have this time around is the creation of a separate Part 7 in the new code for the wildland urban interface code. Previously, the requirements of the wildland urban interface applied to structures in a WUI or state designated fire hazard severity zone were contained within the California Building Code Chapter 7 and the California Residential Code Section R337. At the same time, well, those requirements now they're being moved and consolidated to a new part, a new book, basically, Part 7. So instead of 11 books, we now are going to have 12. This change is intended to address the escalating risk of wildfires throughout the state while increasing the resilience of structures and ensuring more sustainable communities within these WUI areas. We also have local modifications, and most of them are two of them. One of them is electrification of buildings. The city is repealing Municipal Code Section 14.06, which require all new buildings to be all electric with no natural gas allowed. The other local amendment is electrical vehicle charging infrastructure. The city previously required electric vehicle charging system infrastructure to be installed on non-residential and hotel motels buildings via municipal code amendment. The requirement for the EV charger infrastructure for residential and non-residential building has been incorporated in the 2025 California Green Building Code sections section number 4.1064 for residential mandatory measures and 5.1065 for non-residential mandatory measures. The municipal code amendment is no longer required. The Green Building Standards Code Title 24 Part 11 shall be adopted without amendments. So the recommendations we are asking from City Council is to introduce an ordinance repealing Chapter 14.06 of the Half Moon Bay Municipal Code, Electrification of Buildings, and repealing and replacing Chapter 14.04 of the Half Moon Bay Municipal Code, adopting by reference the 2025 edition of the California Building Standards Code, with local amendments and finding the amendments to be exempt from environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act, and direct staff to place the ordinance and the attached resolution establishing the need for local modifications to the California Building Standards Code and ratifying the Coastside Fire Protection District's Ordinance Number 2025-05 on the consent calendar for adoption on November 18, 2025. In conclusion, staff recommends that City Council introduce an ordinance to adopt the 2025 California Building Standard Code with the local amendments described herein. The second reading will be brought back to council at its next meeting, November 18, along with a resolution determining the need for local modifications to the California Building Standards Code and ratifying the Coastside Fire Protection District Ordinance. The new state codes, as modified by the local modifications, will take effect on January 1st, 2026. Staff will submit the ordinance and resolution making findings of local necessity to the California Building Standards Commission before the ordinance goes into effect, as required by Health and Safety Code Section 17958.7. This concludes staff report.
Thank you. Do we have any clarifying questions?
So repealing the following provisions, and I think I'm just referring to the gas, because I remember that was the thing where no more gas appliances, no more gas heaters, and then everybody started switching to different styles
electrical.
Of heating and different styles mm-hmm. of water heating. So are we saying now we're going to repeal that and not go forward on that, on the old construction, or is that just for new construction?
Right now we are suggesting people to continue to try to move towards electrical. We cannot enforce gas at all. Part of this is because of there was a lawsuit. I don't know if you're familiar. There was a correct. So based on that, we have to pretty much repeal everything that has to do with reach codes. I think Berkeley, and this is my personal opinion, went too strong on changing from gas to electrical. We tried to phase it, and if I'm not wrong, it was going to be in 2045 when eventually, we were going to be completely, fully just electrical. And a lot of the permit that I get, some of them are going in that direction by their own choosing. Those who want to continue with gas, we have to,
Like a gas stove is a lot easier if you have the gas already there. Like I was fortunate, Casa Del Mar Homes had electric and gas. So mm-hmm. I went electric back 20 years ago. I'm kind of happy because I went that route, especially with solar panels and all that stuff and the green initiative that we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go into a water heater situation, it's a little trickier. It's a little bit cheaper to buy a water heater than it is the new style of heating, for your, what do they call it, on demand. And then the other one was for heating systems. Also, they run gas, and now they're using other systems. And that gets to be expensive. So if you have an older home and you're changing your heater and you're changing your water heater, that can be very expensive to be conforming with the new law.
Please.
Oh, the light on that one doesn't work.
Microphone work?
Press it one more time.
There we go. So in the last code cycle, the city decided that they were going to go above and beyond the code and require that new homes be powered solely by electrical power for a new home. But based on the lawsuits that arose, especially in Berkeley, we're no longer able to enforce that code. So the new code, we're removing any local amendment and going back to just the California code, which allows gas or electric. So we can no longer enforce the electrification of buildings, so we'll repeal that amendment.
So the fire codes ordinance and their changes, is there significant changes in there related to anything new that are going to be totally different than anything that the community's seen before?
We both agree that fire should have been here to address that question. What I have read is considerable, but definitely I will defer that to fire.
Okay.
So
Is fire coming to
fire,
here, right?
Fire is coming forward in on the 18th, I believe.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So that's a good
come,
plug.
They
to
will
make.
Come and they will be able to explain each item within that matrix. Yeah. But the majority of their amendments are similar to what has been adopted in previous years, but there are minor changes and we will leave it to them to
okay.
explain.
Okay. And later. They will be here November 18th. Yeah. That's what I want to make sure.
You know, I'm not sure you introduced yourself. Did I miss something?
All right. Good evening. My name is Keith Weiner. I'm your building official. I work as a contractor to the city, so I'm not city staff, which is why I'm not presenting. But it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, Mr. Mayor and the council.
I have an interesting follow-up question. If I am correct, the county of San Mateo, a couple of years ago, put an ordinance regulation that, I don't know, within the next year or so, forbidding the sale of gas hot water heaters in the county. I was wondering if this Berkeley case changes that as well. I mean, not that you couldn't buy a hot water heater outside the county, but
right.
Do you remember that? Something like that, yeah.
I thought CARB came out with regulations regarding appliances. Something like, on a certain date, you would no longer be able to sell, like, gas water heaters and gas stoves in California, something like that. Well, I think that, well, no, it was CARB, but I think the county... I think they did a shorter period of time, but does this not account for CARB regulations? And that is the California Air Resources Board.
Right. So there's legislation. There's bills in process that would eliminate. Carbon-producing appliances by an X date. And those may very well come to fruition and happen. But the amendment that we put in was a local ordinance where the city of Half Moon Bay decided that we were going to go above and beyond the code. And that's the local ordinances are what's being repealed throughout California. and the code gets updated every 3 years for just these types of things. And so if the state decides that they're going to enforce those codes and further restrict the carbon outlay of a residential home, then those will be incorporated into the code that's issued by the Building Standards Commission. But what we're talking about here is they're saying that legally we can no longer enforce a local amendment requiring somebody to electrify their home.
Got it. Thank you.
If I may, just I was just, you know, using the old internet research, and it looks like the Berea Air Quality Management District has a ban prohibiting the sale and installation of gas appliances that begins to take effect in 2027. So I think that may be what we're referencing here. It appears that that's still in effect regardless of the Berkeley decision. So maybe it just hasn't been challenged yet.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would someone like to make a motion? Are we ready?
We still need to do a public hearing. Mayor Brownstone, could we open the public hearing first?
Opening for public comment on this ordinance. No one in the room? Anyone online? Okay. I thought it and then forgot it to do that. Thank you.
We do have a hand raised now.
Oh, no, let's see. Someone called admin, named admin, would they like to speak? You're showing up as admin.
Mike Pereira, mayor, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike, you have 3 minutes.
Yeah, I did click on that just as you were closing. I think Councilmember Ruddick is correct about CARB, and of course the city manager has just verified it. And it does not seem that this was crafted with knowledge of that CARB ruling. And I don't know that there's much urgency to this, but it would seem to me that your ordinance should take the CARB ruling into consideration. I'll make just that short comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, I think we're actually adopting a state code, though, right?
Correct. Correct. So if there's a law that is statewide, it will be enacted by this code. Right? It will just be a modifier. And the code, the state code that's issued by the BSC, the Building Standards Commission, has supplements. So if a state code that was statewide reaching that prohibited the sale of gas appliances, then it would be issued as a supplement to this code issued by BSC. It wouldn't be a local amendment that would be needed to enforce that. So I stand firm that, well, we do not need to amend the code, and that something that goes statewide will be affected in this code that we're adopting.
Okay, I move upon public comments are now closed. Thank you. I move that we introduce an ordinance repealing Chapter 14.06 of the Half Moon Bay Municipal Code, Electrification of Buildings, and repealing and replacing Chapter 14.04 of the Half Moon Bay Municipal Code, adopting by reference the 2025 edition of the California Building Standards Code with local amendments, and finding amendments to be exempt from environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. And two, direct staff to place the ordinance in the attached resolution, establishing the need for local modifications to the California Board Building Standards Code, and ratifying the Coastside Fire Protection District's ordinance number 2025-01 on the consent calendar for adoption on November 18th, 2025.
Second.
Do we need a roll call on this, Kevin?
Sure.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Johnson?
Yes.
Councilmember Nagengast?
Yes.
Councilmember Penrose?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Ruddick?
Yes.
Mayor Brownstone?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Now move on to item 9C, the 2023 through 2031 housing elements. Start with a staff report.
Good evening, Mayor Brownstone and Council. Last time I was before you, I was able to give you a very brief presentation. This time I prepared a longer one, but I think I'm going to skip ahead. I was expecting we might have some members of the public here. I would also like to make sure that Asher Cohn who is the consultant who's worked on the housing element with city staff for years now, is available on Zoom, Maggie? Maggie, is Asher available on Zoom? So when we get to the point where you have clarifying questions, there may be some that he's better suited to answer than me. So I'm bringing before you the fifth draft of the housing element. The staff recommendation is to receive public input and evaluate revisions to the 2023-2031 sixth cycle housing element. Adopt the mitigated negative declaration for the housing element and adopt the housing element dated October 2025 for review by the California Department of Housing and Community Development. From here on, I'll just say HCD. So I have some slides here for background. I think you're all very familiar with what the housing element is and why we're here. I'm going to skip through those. I did want to talk a little bit about the regional housing needs allocation numbers, though. We are required to have 400, our allocation is 480 units, and they break out as 181 very low income units, 104 low, 54 moderate, and 141 above moderate. And the reason I wanted to talk about this a little bit is because we did get some questions about why we have the number 782 also as the number of housing sites that we identified. I think Commissioner Johnson wanted clarification on that, and that is because the state requires us to have a buffer of anywhere between 15% and 30% of housing sites, recognizing that even though we identify the number of housing sites for the number of units that the state requires, not all of those will be developed over the course of the 8 years between housing elements. So we have extra sites identified. So that brings us to 782. I'll skip through this, but I will point out that this was started in March 2021, public outreach for the housing element. It's gone through a number of drafts. The last draft that we sent to HCD for certification did not address Measure D because we were waiting on input from HCD. We've since received some input from them in their May 20th letter. So this is the fifth draft now. I'll go over some of the requested revisions from HCD in their May 20th letter. They asked us to clarify the remaining steps needed for some of the pipeline sites under development. So we added additional information about non-governmental constraints and additional information on a site-by-site basis. HCD also asked to add information on environmental constraints that might preclude development. So we added a paragraph describing overall environmental constraints in Half Moon Bay, noting that the city lies within the coastal zone. HCD asked about updates to any sites, which was not applicable. That's number three on this slide. They also asked for additional language on potential interventions to support for supportive housing regarding emergency shelters. And we added some suggested language. And this is all, if you want to see this specific language, it's all in attachment 5 in your packets. They asked us to add additional information on the approval times for typical developments. So we added some information to clarify that recent development patterns our typical concerning approval times and a program to monitor our approval times over time. And then in terms of the really bigger change and the area where we spoke with HCD staff quite a bit, HCD staff did talk with Coastal Commission staff, and they reached some understanding of how the coastal zone is different when it comes to housing law. And they came back to us, specifically on Measure D, with some suggestions. They asked us to update Program 6-8 to provide alternative actions if there's no amendment to the LCLUP. And specifically, they asked for a code amendment, which would seek an LCP amendment to revise allocation requirements for ADUs and JDUs to make them a half allocation rather than a full allocation. They also asked that we look at reallocating unused Measure D allocations. So when someone receives a Measure D allocation, if they don't come in to apply for a permit after a year, then their allocation expires. And so they want us to amend the code to allow for carryover. And then importantly, they asked that we put out a ballot measure. And the ballot measure would redefine the downtown area so that it's the same as the town center. And it would exempt accessory dwelling units altogether from Measure D. So that would not be council acting to actually approve anything that would change ADUs, or that will remove ADUs from Measure D, but simply putting the ballot measure out there so people could vote on that. So those are the changes, the major changes to the housing element. Also before you tonight is the CEQA document. Rincon Consultants prepared an initial study, which led to a mitigated negative declaration. That was available to public and published and duly noticed, I'll just say, September 9th, 2025 through October 9th, 2025. There is no impact or less than significant impact with one mitigation measure, which relates to protecting nesting birds. And with that, I'll conclude my presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions.
I know there was some follow-up about what mechanism HCD relayed to the city about this Measure D. And it's my understanding there was nothing submitted in writing by HCD.
Well, the letter...
But the letter, does the letter say, thou shalt put it on a ballot?
Let me look at the language exactly.
I mean, I'm just asking. I know there was verbal discussions, and I don't understand why HCD won't put it in writing to us.
Yeah, they want the what the letter said was that they regarding Program 6-8, they want us to provide alternative actions with discrete timing if an LCP amendment is not pursued to exempt ADU and JDUs from residential dwelling unit allocation limitations. So what they're saying here is they want to have ADUs and JDUs exempted from Measure D. They did not say specifically it has to be through a ballot measure.
Okay.
However, given our own legal research, we know that the only way to do that is through a ballot measure.
And Is the church property still, the Catholic church property still an opportunity site?
It is an opportunity site, right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
So I was sitting next to my coffee table about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I noticed the Chronicle Insights section sitting on the table that I hadn't really noticed until then. And there's an article in it that says, a new court ruling blows up California housing law. And it's about an appeals court ruling against the city of Redondo Beach. And they basically tossed out the housing element for a number of reasons, according to the article. But one of them was the use of overlays to create more dwelling units to meet the quota. And they're saying that that is basically illegal. And it had other issues with the housing element as well. But, you know, the headline is, a new court ruling blows up California housing law. So I'm just wondering, since our housing element and LCP rely on overlays, workforce housing overlays primarily, have we done, prepared an analysis of this appeals court ruling and its potential impact on our housing element? I mean, it's basically saying you can't do that, and yet we're doing that. And I'm wondering, should we even, you know, authorize this tonight if we don't understand what the impact of this ruling is on our own housing element? Seems like there's similar issues here.
I read that case last week and was surprised by it, given that I think in that case, HCD actually had certified the housing element.
Right.
And generally, the courts would defer to that. I will say I have not done that analysis. I don't know to the extent we rely on overlays versus other mechanisms. I think we've got a much bigger buffer than Redondo Beach had, and I think Redondo Beach has maybe had a different posture in terms of being a little bit more aggressive in terms of fighting HCD, frankly, than other cities are. I think I guess I would see if Leslie has any additional thoughts about the extent of our use of overlays, but I do believe we've got a pretty sizable buffer, which would insulate us from any sort of litigation. I think also the other thing is that in Redondo Beach, the opponents of that plan had made were very vocal in their opposition to the plan, so they had a heads up that there was litigation risk and concern about the overlays. I don't think we have a similar situation here. But I guess, Leslie, I don't know if you have anything to add about overlay, workforce housing overlays.
I'm reluctant to add anything because I don't know anything about the case.
Well, I wasn't asking to add anything. I was wondering whether we should defer temporarily while we, analyze the impacts of this decision on us, but just a question.
I mean, I would ask, do we know how much of our estimated housing production is based on our workforce housing overlay?
Not off the top of my head. It might be a good question for Asher. He might have a better sense of that.
I want to clarify. So in this case, Redondo Beach was suing HCD?
No, it was actually an outside group challenging Redondo Beach's housing element. I think like a YIMBY type of group, if I'm not mistaken.
So HCD, who would appeal this case? HCD?
I think it was the. I have to go back and look. I think the plaintiff.
The article says it was a developer.
Yeah, okay. So pro-development interest, the development community, challenged the city's housing element. I don't even know if HCD was a member, was part of the lawsuit. But this was a group that wanted more to see more housing in Redondo Beach,
that would be more readily approved. So it wanted Redondo Beach to do better in terms of its housing yeah. elements.
But you don't think it's really similar to our situation?
Well, I think one thing I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think a critical question is really how much of our RENA are we satisfying by our workforce housing overlay? Because if that number is pretty small, I wouldn't be concerned about this case.
I think we are satisfying almost all of our RENA through opportunity sites and housing sites. Did we manage to get Asher on? Okay, let's have him respond.
Yes, good evening, members of council, Asher Cohen with M Group. So we have, I just pulled up the housing element I'm looking at. We have a table of housing opportunity sites. It's table C5 on C13. I don't know what number that is in the packet. But there's potentially three sites that use the workforce housing overlay. However, the critical difference here, I believe, with what I've read with the Redondo Beach case is that they use an overlay over sites that were active commercial or industrial uses and have the argument that was made is that those were sites that the underlying zoning did not require residential housing. So it's a very different situation than the three sites we have where there's, we don't have that conflict. And I would say that from what I've read of the Redondo Beach case, that stemmed from an earlier case in the city of Clovis, which had to do with housing overlays and the similar situation. And that came out in, I believe, 2023. And as part of this draft and the previous draft, we've worked with HCD in ensuring that we, what they called our Clovis analysis, and that was something that we had to work through with them to make sure that our overlay wouldn't conflict with that underlying legal case.
Thanks, that's a very helpful distinction in terms of the Redondo Beach case, and thank you for reminding me that, because I failed to mention that the underlying zoning there was commercial. And so the court was very concerned that this wouldn't actually develop as housing. And so our housing sites, Asher, correct me if I'm wrong, they are different. The overlay is over essentially residential uses.
That's correct. There's zoning that would allow residential use, and the overlay just allows workforce housing, so a different style of residential.
Yeah, I'm hearing, I feel that's different enough so we could proceed. Well, that's a discussion yet. We're just clarifying here, sorry. Are there any other clarifying questions before we open it up for public comment? Okay. Now open for public comment. So far, we have two online and one in the room. I'll start with the one in the room, which will be Joaquin Jimenez, and he will be followed by Jeremy Levine, who's online. So first, we'll hear from Joaquin. Thank you.
Hello. Good evening, one more time. Honorable Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members, city staff, members of the public. So we are in a predicament. Yes, questions. I mean, is half the city of Half Moon Bay ready to provide, you know, housing by 2031? Right, the RENA cycle ends on 2031. I mean, we are waiting for housing to be, build your own community. I don't know if you remember, I do remember March 8th, 2023, there was a Coastal Commission meeting here at the Oceano Hotel. And one of the questions that it was asked to them, how come you're not approving low-income housing development in the coast? The answer was, we don't have any applicants. So they're not denying any development for low-income housing or very low-income housing here in the coast. They are no applicants. What is Half Moon Bay doing to invite our local developers to build low-income housing that is greatly needed here in our community? 555 Kelly is something that has been talked about, and it's splitting our community about housing for retired farm workers. I mean, so far, the low-income housing that we have is in Stone Pine, 46 units. I mean, the numbers are very low-income, 181 units. For low-income, 104. Add them up. So to you, questions are, what are we going to do when we are not able to meet this quota of building this low-income housing and the state comes in? And it's going to force us to develop. I mean, are we ready for that? There's a big discussion about potential sites here in Half Moon Bay to develop housing. There's potential sites. I mean, our beloved Catholic Church, Catholic community, thinking that we were trying to take the land away from them. We were not taking no land away from anybody. It's a potential site. We have other sites. We need the housing. Our community needs the housing. If we don't do this, we're going to be in trouble. The city of Half Moon Bay is going to be in trouble. We're going to see a lot of four-story buildings that are going to be built for low-income housing. Are we prepared for that? Ask your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Joaquin. Our next speaker on Zoom online is Jeremy Levine, to be followed by Mike Farrar.
Good evening, Half Moon Bay City Council, City staff. Jeremy Levine here speaking on behalf of the Housing Leadership Council of San Mateo County. HLC exists to work with communities and their leaders to produce and preserve quality, affordable homes. And to that end, we have commented and reviewed and sometimes commented and reviewed some more on every housing element in San Mateo County. Half Moon Bays is the last housing element waiting for certification from HCD, so we're following it closely. And a couple thoughts. The first is that the housing element process requires removing constraints to housing, and Measure D is a pretty strong constraint to housing. HCD is asking the city to determine that ADUs are not subject to the Measure D unit cap, and we agree with that legal analysis that just under existing ADU law, the city can deem that ADUs do not apply to the cap overall. It's really important to further ADU production in the city to not constrain it. And we even go a step further. As we've written in emails to the city, we think that Measure D is not enforceable under state housing element law. The city of Alameda had a somewhat similar growth cap, which they deemed an unmitigable constraint on meeting their housing goals, which they then bypassed. And they got HCD's sign-off to do that. HCD, I think, would support the city declaring Measure D unenforceable under state law. And that is potentially going to be necessary for Half Moon Bay to meet its housing goals. As the previous commenter noted, there will have to be more housing in Half Moon Bay. Which brings me to my second point. There are projects currently proposed in Half Moon Bay that need this council's support, and without this council's support, the city's housing element is not going to pass muster. So HLC and our partners hope that the city will move forward with the existing housing proposals, including projects like 555 Kelly, which are part of the community's housing element, and not try to impose, again, new constraints that are not described in the document. So we look forward to continuing to support the city's work. for what it's worth, we don't think that you have anything to worry about from the Redondo Beach case, so I'm glad the council member brought it up and did due diligence, but we do think that there are ways the city can continue working to support housing and being bold with policy reforms that will make a difference. So thank you for your time. I look forward to hearing the rest of tonight's conversation.
Thank you, Jeremy. Next speaker, and looks like our final speaker, is Mike Farrar.
Thank you, Mayor, council members. I don't want to get too distracted by the prior comment, but I will try to zero in on some things that troubled me, which is a state agency that's not elected. It's really not even appointed, telling you that you have to change your ordinances or you have to put something on the ballot. And I find that extraordinarily distasteful, and it makes me very happy that I'm not sitting in any of your seats. I am disappointed that the Coastal Commission appears to be standing by while this happens. If I were to believe in ghosts, I would have to say something about the ghost of Peter Douglas and what his reaction would be to this situation. Measure D is a very good ordinance. It was passed by a wide margin by the voters of Half Moon Bay. There seems to be this mythical concept that there's this huge demand that would only be built if we would get rid of Measure D. So how many are rejected every year? I will tell you, it's a piddly number. And in most years, we're not even close to the Measure D limits. This is ghost chasing. Maybe you have to agree to this, although, you know, the hippies used to call it a future trip, promising to do something in the future in return for something now, which is a bit strange. But it's, I guess that's the problem that you faced with. Put it on the ballot. Some of us are not going to vote for it. Some of us will fight it. And I think that really should be brought to the people. Even the half count should go to the people. Put it up there. Let the people vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. That concludes our public session. Thank you, everybody, for contributing your input. Public session closed. Now open for council discussion.
I think, the point five, I think I was talking to a commissioner over the weekend about it, and it's either no Measure D for ADUs and JDAs, or the point five, and it goes to the vote because we're changing Measure D. I think it should go to the vote, but I also am in favor of ADUs because I think it's, because I think ADUs are important for our town. I think it's something that I remember back in the day as a planning commissioner, ADUs were not popular and we didn't want them. But the way this housing element's been written with parking was an issue, and they're restricting or not, they're pulling back on that a little bit. They weren't as popular, and I remember substandard lots were trying to merge the lots and make bigger homes, and now we're saying smaller homes, so we're trying to make them more affordable. And so I'm in favor of the ADUs. I'm in favor of going to the vote so that we can get people's input on this. But I also think we have to have like another option too if it doesn't pass in a vote. Isn't that true in there somewhere it was written?
Yeah, if the ballot measure didn't pass, they would
ask that we explore other avenues. It's not clear what those other avenues are.
Sorry about that. Let me move this. So I don't think the homeless count was correct on page 260 because we got data today, if I'm not mistaken, how many people we have. Because in the report it says a certain amount, but it doesn't match.
Yeah, I can, if it's okay to address that. The homeless count, the official number comes through a biannual process. The data you heard today is an informal process that is only within San Mateo County and is done through the service providers. So they're different, they're similar comparable data points, but they're collected in different ways. And so there's a consistency here that's important for this particular item. So what we heard today is boots on the ground, something going on. The number that's referenced here is a more consistent approach that happens every other year. And that count will be upped, re-upped in January. But we won't have that data till late next year.
We talk about the mobile home park facilities, expansion of existing mobile home parks and allow appropriate sites. I agree with that, which is on 272. I know Keith Nearhand's talking about building some mobile homes up in Goat Hill, and he's looking at other areas. Workforce housing and essential workers, I brought that. And for teachers, what else? I'm in support of the small lots fill-ins. And then what else was I talking about? Oh, I want to talk about LCLUP policy 2-47, page 282. Riparian, I was bringing up, it's talking about riparian and riparian areas. And I was giving like examples of Kehoe. If you have a riparian area that's deemed riparian, so the water course now called water course, but it has willow trees, how many other homes do we have that are in that riparian area, like ditches and all that stuff, and they're excluded? And here we have potential areas that somebody could build an ADU, but we have the riparian, and that's an issue. And how would that be affected? And what kind of is this going to make it easier, or is it going to make it harder, or is it the same process because that now has to go to CDP and Coastal Commission?
So typically when there's development that would be near a riparian area, there's a buffer that it has to stay out of. If the lot is such that they can't completely stay out of the buffer, they move as far away as they can, and there are other smaller buffers that you put in place in that case.
What if the property already had mitigated measure that it was built out at some point with a mitigated measure like a frog wall? Could you add an ADU in that area then afterwards since it's already been mitigated?
I'm sorry, say that again.
If you added into your home, let's say 20 years ago, and you went into the riparian area or the buffer area, but there was a mitigation that you did, like for instance a frog wall, and it was approved by Fish and Game and all that stuff, would you have to go through that whole process again to add an ADU?
I can't say off the top of my head what the process would be in that kind of very specific situation. But I would say that if the ADU is going to impact habitat,
then that would take it out of the realm of an administrative coastal development permit.
Okay. And then, so the traffic conditions are level F, as called out on 284, and that's, so they're saying on the mitigated deck, whatever it was, that's not going to change. The traffic will always be F. I mean, we're not going to, even though we're growing, it's just going to always stay at the same level because we don't have any really course of action to change the traffic. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you answered the question on the 480 units versus 72. It's just that there's a buffer incorporated inside there. It's just so they go bigger and they think outside. fire safety. No, I don't need to talk about that. But the parking standards. So on that note, we're easing up on the parking standards for ADUs and JDAs, correct, and for these homes. But at the same token, we have a parking issue in our town. So I think as our city, we should think about that because we have parking issues, but we're also easing up on the parking restrictions for these units in the downtown area. So that's one thing that we've all talked about that before.
Are there any more? Do we need an answer to something now? Or no? Okay. Do you have a comment? Yeah, go ahead.
Just a couple of things. If I could direct something to the city attorney, Catherine, just quickly, you're absolutely confident that the Redondo Beach decision has nothing here in Half Moon Bay. We're okay.
Yeah, thank you for bringing it up again. I actually had a chance to pull up the case because I was going by memory because I read it last week and hadn't refreshed on it. So just to summarize the facts of that case, I do think it's distinguishable, but just to better explain why. In that case, it was a developer that sued the city, arguing that its housing element was not in compliance because they had not identified adequate sites, and the sites that they had identified, they were commercial sites that were zoned commercial and industrial. And the city was using them to accommodate their low-income housing need. And the city put an overlay that would allow for density of up to 55 dwelling units per acre. So the city was really hoping, you know, basically on paper, it was looking like these are going to be really good sites. We're going to get a lot of housing out of them. But what the court found was that, well, that doesn't actually ensure that any housing units are going to be developed there just because a developer may develop up to 55 units doesn't ensure that that will happen, given that they're industrial and commercial, that someone could just come in and just do industrial or commercial. I did find the case surprising, given that HCD actually had certified Redondo Beach's housing element. So I am surprised at the outcome. Nonetheless, I do not see any parallel with what Half Moon Bay's housing element has done, given that the overlay has only been applied to a small number of sites, and those sites allow for residential use, not the thing that the court was concerned about here, that they actually just might develop as commercial sites, and we're going to get no housing units out of them.
So we don't have our workforce overlays are on residentially zoned.
Correct. And I think our consultant could give a little more details about the specific sites, but yes, that's correct. That's a major distinguishing factor.
Okay, and then I can't comprehend why HCD is demanding us to put something on the ballot.
HCD doesn't have any right to command us to do anything.
Okay,
including
Thank you.
Put anything on the ballot.
Thank you.
I just want to say there is a workforce overlay over Shoreline Station, is there not? And the public facilities in Shoreline Station. 10 units workforce overlay.
Do we want to check with our consultant to see if
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. Can Asher, did you get that question?
I'm so sorry. I was responding to your question about ADU parking.
Yeah, I actually did not hear
the question, but which sites have the workforce housing overlay?
Could you repeat the question?
I was just pointing out that there is one for this area over here that allows for 10 units maximum. But I don't need a big discussion about it. I'm just pointing out
that one of the housing sites in this area for 10 units is covered by the workforce, is there because of the workforce housing overlay.
Right, because, so there's also workforce overlay over school district property that's not zoned for housing. And there's one here in the Ted Adcock Center area. So it's not all of ours are over existing housing zoning. That's all I'm trying to point out.
Okay. Yeah, but this is not an agendized item. Tonight we're here to discuss two issues. One is the issue of whether or not JDUs and ADUs can be have reduced amount of Measure D allocations, specifically half an Measure D allocation, and whether or not we are going to pay any attention at all to HCD's suggestion, was it? I don't know what we call it, that we initiate a ballot measure. It's not their business, and I am absolutely against it. So I am in favor of a half of a Measure D allocation to ADUs and JDUs, but I am not in favor of any kind of ballot measure.
I would agree with that. I'm fine with assigning half of an allocation to an ADU and exempting JDUs, and I think we can do that without putting anything on the ballot. I'd say we just do it, if we're challenged, do something different. But, I'm not going to agree to put it on the ballot at this point, but I will agree to look for ways to accommodate them. And if that means assigning a lesser amount of Measure D, I'm good with that, or exempting JDUs, I'm good with that as a matter of policy. And I think looking at a rollover, if we have, unused, we give people Measure Ds, year goes by, they don't use them, we take them back, we roll them over, allow the carryover. That creates more Measure Ds and more development. And I don't think we have to go to the ballot to do that.
Can we agree to that at this hearing? Okay. I'm just asking a question.
Well, I think what we're saying is, sure, let's approve this tonight, but take out any mention that we're going to put anything on the ballot. That we're going to process, we're going to, work on assigning a half an allocation, exempting JDUs, and looking at rollovers. And I'm willing to have that in the housing element and approve that with that language. Just don't include a sentence saying, we agree to put anything on the ballot. I don't think it's necessary yet.
So according to staff, this isn't what HCD wants. It's just we don't have to do it with a ballot initiative.
So what HCD asked us for was first the code amendments to be followed by the ballot measure in 2028. So the code amendments would get us to a half a unit more quickly because we wouldn't be able to do a ballot measure until 2028. And then the ballot measure would remove ADUs from Measure D altogether. And that's really where HCD wants to go. They want ADUs out of Measure D. And by 2028, we're already going to be in the next cycle, the next RENA cycle. And then we'll be working with HCD on an update,
So, you know, at that point, we've been unsuccessful exempting these by a matter of policy, you know, then we can deal with it. But I don't say we, I don't want any language committing to a ballot measure.
I think it is important to point out that based on our conversations with HCD, they will not certify this housing element if we don't include that language. So just making it transparent to the council what we can expect if we remove that language and submit it to them, it is likely that they'll come back with additional comments and we'll continue this
and
process,
then we,
which is
then
fine.
We don't have a housing fine. Element.
Right.
Right. And then what?
Well,
we don't
know,
have a housing element.
Yeah, we've talked about the risks and the consequences, but that's, you know.
I'm willing to take the risk. Right. I am unwilling to have them tell us something as outrageous as having us tell us to put something on the ballot. That's not their business. They can tell us about ADUs and Measure D allocations all they want. And I agree with that. I think that's their place. But it's not their place to tell us what to put on the ballot. It's not. That's interfering with city government. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's not aimed at staff. This is not staff's, our demand. It's an HCD demand. And I just wanted to make sure we were clear that the likely consequence is it will not be certified and we'll be continuing to work with HCD on this going forward. So.
Well, just tell them that we're going to do this without including any language about a ballot measure.
So this is kind of a trust issue here. We want to say we'll do this by policy. That's the policy we'll establish. And we don't need to have a ballot initiative, that'll be our policy. And don't expect that policy to be reversed. And talk that through with HCD. Now, you asked what's the consequence of not having an approved housing element opens up the whole builder's remedy issue, right? So builders could come in and start building all kinds of things without any restrictions, all kinds of heights, et cetera. So that's always been the risk of not having an approved housing element. So that's what we're balancing here.
If somebody wants to put changes to Measure D in the ballot, citizens can gather, you know, petitions and signatures and put it on the ballot. Doesn't have to be the council.
So, are we going to structure a motion around this, or do we say we want to adopt something here, excluding the requirement to have a ballot initiative, that we agree to not include ADUs?
We don't mention the ballot at all. We want to make changes, just to our policy about ADUs and JVs and Measure D allocations and leave it at that.
I'll forget about the rollover.
Well, that doesn't really address.
Maybe I can comment on that. The current draft of the housing element that we've submitted for your consideration includes language about a ballot measure. So I think what the mayor is asking is, if you want to make a motion adopting the draft of the housing element that we presented to you today, but before we submit it to HCD, we remove those references. That's what he's pointing out. Is that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
So moved. I'm like, how to phrase exactly? What's the phrasing of that? Catherine, maybe you can help.
I can take a stab at that. And I actually, before I do want to confirm what Vice Mayor Ruddick said about the workforce housing overlay. There are two sites I'm seeing in the opportunity sites that have a workforce housing overlay over a public facilities land use designation. So I guess I would say, that's different. You know, I can still distinguish it because it's not commercial like the Redondo Beach case. But again, we do have a sizable buffer. And so even if for some reason those sites were not allowed, because someone sued and challenged them, we would still have a buffer. So I don't think anyone would be incentivized to challenge those sites anyway. As far as a motion, okay, so I'm going to point you to program 6-8, which basically says all the things that the city is going to do regarding Measure D. And the first two bullets, it sounds like, are acceptable. Seek approval of a local coastal program amendment to revise the allocation requirements for ADUs and JDUs from a full allocation per unit to a lesser amount, such as a partial allocation of 0.5 or amount considered reasonable by the city. The city will prepare amendments to its local coastal program for council consideration and coastal commission certification to increase available allocations. That sounds like that's okay with the council. And then the next bullet I think is also okay. It's reallocate unused Measure D allocations for ADUs and affordable housing units by rolling over those allocations to the next year for which no building permit is applied. I'll keep that one. The next bullet is the one that says prepare a ballot measure for the 2028 election with substantial public communications process that will revise Measure D by, one, revising to define the downtown area, and then two, exempting ADUs and JDUs from Measure D. So I think that's the bullet point that the council is proposing to strike. And the last bullet point, which then would become moot because it says if the ballot measure fails, the city will seek other measures as necessary. So I guess the motion to approve the housing element, striking the two those two bullets in program 6-8.
And I would say, you know, exempt JDUs. I mean, they're part of a house. Why would we, you know, require another Measure D? So I would include going to the Coastal Commission for an amendment, not just for, you know, reducing the Measure D required for exterior ADUs, but why not just exempt JDUs?
The language does include JDUs, JADUs. I guess the thinking was, well, they do actually generate population, some level of population, and so depending on the data we can collect, the city can collect in terms of how much population, we just want to make sure it's consistent with Measure D. I think that could be a decision that could be made when council considers the amendment to Measure D. I see your point that they do not generally generate the same level of population. Leslie, do you have anything to add to that, or the overall motion?
Yeah, I mean, we could use language to consider exempting JDUs, just to make sure that we include it as a possibility, but mm-hmm. we would need the research to back it up.
Yeah.
I would put that language in because it, you know, looks committed on our part.
Right, right. So that would be go in the first bullet to add a consider exempting JDUs. Okay. Yes, I'm happy to. Would like you to state the motion, a suggested motion.
That would be terrific. I didn't know if you needed a break to do that, or
actually, I could use a short break to do that.
Okay.
Thank you for suggesting that.
Okay, let's take a short break.
Thank you.
And we'll come back. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We're back in session, and we have a motion to make. Some language here.
If I could, Mayor, I do want to just make one explanatory note regarding this staff recommendation. There's two recommended changes to Program 6.8 language. The first one we talked about, it's the second bullet, remove all references to a ballot measure. The first sentence in that program, I will say I have some concerns with, and from a legal perspective, I would recommend deleting it. I understand it was language recommended by HCD, but I did just want to note that it states that Measure D is only applicable to the extent that it is judicially determined to be in compliance with state law. That suggests to me that we need to go to court to get a judicial determination, and that just like I think the council's concerned about being forced to put something on the ballot, I think there's a I would have a concern about being forced to take something to court to determine that it is valid. So I think that so my recommendation would be, since we're making changes to this program, to also remove that sentence.
So can I just say so moved? Or have to, so you need me to read that out?
Or we just so this is the full recommended motion in front of you. Oh, you don't? Oh.
Okay. Want me to make the motion? I'll make the motion here. We move that we adopt the mitigated negative declaration for the 2023-2031-6 cycle housing element and adopt the housing element dated October 2025 for review by the California Department of Housing and Community Development with the following amendments to programs 6 through 8. 6-8, sorry. Remove the sentence Measure D, as currently enforced through Section 8 of the measure, is only applicable to the extent that it is judicially determined to be in compliance with state law, and remove all references to a ballot measure.
Second.
Can we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Johnson?
Yes.
Councilmember Nagengast?
No.
Councilmember Penrose?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Ruddick?
Yes.
Mayor Brownstone?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, everybody. Moving on, we will now have a financial report for the quarter ended on September 30th, 2025. And thank you, Ken. We'll deliver our...
All right, good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Today I'm going to be presenting the financial report. We do these presentations quarterly, and this is for the first quarter that ended this past September. Oh, gotta show it. So starting with revenues, we have our major revenues with a comparison to the prior budget based on percentage. Starting with the first one, transient occupancy tax or TOT tax, we had budgeted $8.6 million and we've received about $900K. That's about 11% of budget, and compared to last year during this time, it was 9%. So it's a little early to conclude definitively, but so far is performing a bit better than anticipated. And I have more information on the next slide. But generally, for the past 6 months have been positive for us in this category. Property taxes, we've received, we budgeted about 3.7. We've received about 700K. This is a bit of an outlier for us. The 700K is a late payment that was due to us from the prior year. So there is a portion of property taxes called a vehicle in lieu fee that is, these are fees that are, there's a point of contention between cities and the state regarding these funds. This was owed to us last year. The state was a bit late in committing to and sending this payment, but it arrived in this past August. Outside of this outlier, we haven't received much property taxes yet, but that is of expected. We get the majority of our property taxes in December and in April. Sales and use tax, we budgeted 4.9. We received about 380K. That does include Measure R, which went into effect back in April, our sales tax increase. About 120 of that is Measure R monies. Between the two, we received about 8% of our budget. It's a little early to tell, but so far is trending as anticipated. Other revenues, we budgeted about 6.4. We received about 500K. Now, this category contains everything else and a lot of different things. So benchmarking is not really a one-to-one thing, but the reason why it's a little bit less than it was in the prior years because of grants. We no longer are getting a CARES grant, so that's kind of reflective in that number. But overall, we can't really draw a conclusion of not if we're going to hit these numbers, but we will know more at the mid-year point. Overall, we have received $2.5 million in revenues, or about 11% of budget. Still early to tell, but revenues generally look promising. Now, for TOT specifically, this chart is of our revenues by month for the past 6 months. The darker teal columns is for this year, and the gray columns are for the year prior. As you can see, month over month, we have been performing better than the prior year. And the past few years, TOT has been was sliding down, but recently is starting to pick up in what appears to be moving in the right direction. We don't know if it will hold, but if we just do what we did last year, we could hit our budget number. On the expenditure side, we are looking good. Because expenditures are a bit more timely and regular, our benchmark is 25%, which we're underneath that. We are at about 9% of what we budgeted for. Now, this finance update does include a budget amendment request for council to for consideration. It is $30,000. This was a budget line item that I intended to include with the original budget adoption back in June. It was a bit of a late revision that didn't quite make it. But during this review and update process, I noticed the omission and just kind of wanted to work it back in officially into the budget. This $30K is for the planning collaborative, which is work to update the safety element. With that, here is our fund balances and reserves, what they will look like June 30th, 2026. Reserves are at $8.8 million. And because we ended last year better than what we expected, we're estimating about $3.2 million in unassigned funds. It's quite a bit, but we don't recommend assigning these funds until mid-year, preferably through our actual annual budget process when we have more data on revenues. Since our reserves are underfunded, we're at 36%. Our target is 50. More likely than not, the recommendation from staff at mid-year or at a budget process would just to put it back into reserves, anything unassigned. Then finally, our last topic is something called carry forwards. So this is a term. Carry forward funds are monies that roll over from one fiscal year to the other. And what happens is, and this is because we have capital projects and other multi-year projects that are that go across multiple fiscal years, but our budgets are 1 year at a time. So we have to roll them over or carry them forward. During the budgeting process and due to the timing, we can't, we have to estimate what's going to roll over, but we don't know that number until after the budget has been approved. So now that we have our final numbers from last year, the recommendation included into tonight is just to make those adjustments to reconcile those funds, just to true it up and roll over and adjust based on what actually happened. The summary of the projects is below. We have about $44 million. That's the total project budgets, and we've spent thus far almost $20 million, leaving a remaining budget of about almost $25 million. That's mostly, I would say 90% in capital projects, but we do have a handful of special initiatives or special projects. And that is included in attachment 2 of the in the agenda packet. Overall, I got a bit of a wordy recommendation for council. Accept the financial report for the quarter ended on September 30th, 2025, and authorize the Administrative Services Director to make budgetary entries to, one, include a $30,000 budget adjustment to the Community Development Department's Planning Collaborative, and two, incorporate previously approved carry-forward funds related to capital improvement projects and other multi-year initiatives. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and that's all I have for council tonight.
Thank you for the updated report, Ken. Appreciate that. Council members, do you have any questions? Let's start with Patrick.
Ken, what was the, because I think you told us at one time when I was just starting off, what's the reserves that you like to see, or maybe Matthew told me, and what are we at right now? What's the average? There was a magic number you guys told me. We like to see this.
So there is a organization called GFOA, which is a nationwide organization that kind of dictates best practices for municipalities. And their number is 16%, because our town relies heavily on TOT. Council approved a policy of 50%, and currently we're at 36%.
Okay. And maybe to clarify a little bit, we have two different types of reserves. We have our general reserves, and that's really what the 16% represents. In our case, we have a policy that says 30%, and it's 30% of our annual budget. So whatever our annual budget is, 30% of that amount needs to be set aside in our operating reserves. And those are the reserves that are really there for dire emergencies. There's some major crisis, and we just don't have money coming in, and that's the only time we would spend that money. In 2019, the council also adopted what we call an economic uncertainty reserve at 20%, which was to smooth us through challenging times such as what we've been going through here. And that's what takes our reserves to 50%. So our reserve policy is significantly higher than other cities. But we think it's important because I think with a smaller budget and our reliance on tourism, a little more volatile. So the goal would be to get back to that 50% reserve amount, 30% fully funded for operating, 20% for economic uncertainty reserves.
I think it was 36 or 32, right?
36.
36.
Yeah.
So amazingly, in 2019, the year before COVID, when all our TOT disappeared, we had this incredible reserve. So I'm just saying. And now we're getting back to fully funding it. So quite the accomplishment, especially compared to a lot of other cities in the county. So thanks. Thanks for the question. Paul, did you have any questions? Someone like, I can make the motion. Someone like to make the motion? It's not, oh.
And just to confirm, we don't have any public comments, both in person or online. Hey.
Public session, public comments, open. None online, none in the room. Thank you. Public comments closed. Sorry. Thank you.
Okay, I move that we accept the financial report for the quarter ended on September 30, 2025 and authorize the Administrative Services Director to make budgetary entries to, one, include a $30,000 budget adjustment for the Community Development Department's Planning Collaborative, and two, incorporate previously approved carry-forward funds related to capital improvement projects and other multi-year initiatives.
Second.
I will take a roll call since we have some spending there.
Councilmember Johnson?
Yes.
Councilmember Nagengast?
Yes.
Councilmember Penrose?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Ruddick?
Yes.
Mayor Brownstone?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. We'll now move on to item 10B, a minimum wage agreement with the County of San Mateo. Have a quick staff report.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Irma Acosta, City Manager's Office, and I am here tonight. I will be presenting the staff report on the minimum wage agreement between the City of Half Moon Bay and the County of San Mateo. My presentation will outline the background of our local minimum wage ordinance, the role of the County's Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement, and the benefits of the partnership. So I'll just begin by providing a little bit of background. On February 4th, 2020, Council adopted the minimum wage ordinance that set the local minimum wage of $15 per hour. Since then, the wage has increased annually based on the Consumer Price Index for the San Francisco, Oakland, and San Jose region. And as of January 1st, 2025, the wage is currently $17.47 per hour. And it applies to all businesses operating within city limits. Over the past few years, the city has received several reports of wage theft and underpayment claims. We have been lucky to be able to work with the district's attorney's office on these cases, but the cases also highlighted the need for a more structured and consistent process for investigating and resolving these complaints. In 2025, the County of San Mateo established the Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement, also referred as OLSE, and their mission is to implement and enforce the county's own minimum wage ordinance, as well as provide education, outreach, and investigative services related to local labor standards. The county currently partners with several cities across San Mateo County, including Belmont, Burlingame, Foster City, Menlo Park, Redwood City, and San Mateo. The proposed agreement would formally establish a partnership between the city and the County of San Mateo. Under the agreement, the county would receive and investigate complaints of possible violations of the city's minimum wage ordinance. And when appropriate, they will issue formal findings and a notice of violation to the employer. If the employer fails to comply after receiving the notice, the case will be referred back to the city for enforcement. They will also provide biannual reports summarizing complaint activity, investigated outcomes, and enforcement trends, and will be meet regularly with city staff to ensure coordination. The initial term of the agreement runs from December 1st, 2025 through June 30th, 2026, at a cost of $5,833. And if the agreement is renewed, it would continue on an annual basis of $10,000 per year, adjusted annually by the consumer price index for wage earners. So partnering with the county offers several benefits to the city. One, it will provide faster and more consistent investigation of wage claims. Second, it'll give the city access to expertise in labor standards and enforcement. And it'll also reduce the administrative burden on city staff, since we don't have a lot of the resources in-house to be able to investigate these claims. And that is essentially my presentation. I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any clarifying questions? No clarifying questions. I'd like to open it up for public comment. Any public comments? None in the room, none in online. Closing our public comments. Would someone like to make a motion?
It should be on there, yeah. Oh, okay.
No, I just want to say that I think this is great. Anything that will take the load off of staff to investigate things that are very difficult to investigate is a great idea. So it looks like it's a win-win.
Yeah.
I move that we authorize the city manager to execute an agreement with the County of San Mateo for investigative services related to enforcement of the city's minimum wage ordinance through the County of San Mateo Office of Labor Standards and Enforcement.
Second. We'll do a roll call just for the heck of it.
Councilmember Johnson?
Yes.
Councilmember Nagengast?
Yes.
Councilmember Penrose?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Reddick?
Yes.
Mayor Brownstone?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Moving on to commission committee updates.
We don't have any updates tonight. So the only thing I'll share is our Recreation Commission meetings are normally the fourth Tuesday of each month, or Wednesday of each month, sorry. And as typical from past years, because of the holiday, both Thanksgiving and Christmas fall right around that time, we cancel those two meetings each year and do a single meeting in mid-December. So the next meeting won't be until mid-December for the Recreation Commission, in case anybody's looking for that.
Great, thank you. Let's see, for future discussion, just a reminder from last time, we're going to look into health insurance, I believe, right? So I just want to remind
us. Staff's already initiated that work, and we'll bring something back in December.
Yeah, great. Any other?
Yeah. It would be great if sometime soon we could have just an update on the planning around Carter Park and fundraising and the process and all that stuff.
Sure. Happy to bring that forward.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll wait 5 seconds.
To the mayor?
Maybe that could just be a city manager update rather than an agenda item. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Any city council reports? Yeah, please.
So, and I'm not sure if that project started. Rumor, in 2024, Caltrans came to the Planning Commission and to the city and, well, the council, and it was a $33 million project. And one of their statements, why they couldn't do work that we wanted, because they couldn't go to the CTC. Well, we're not going to fund this. The CTC, the California Transportation Commission, does the funding. So this project now is a $47 million project, so apparently they got 14 more million more dollars. So that, you know, when somebody tells you that, you have to, you know, dive deeper in there. Because the reason why I know this, because I was following this, and I actually remember I appealed this to the Coastal Commission. So the project was supposed to start this week. I'm not sure if it did, because I know there's some issues. The Coastal Commission required them to have parking spaces because it was happening up in, you know, the north end of the town, and they were moving parking off near Surfers Beach, and there was a meeting, I didn't attend that, recently with the county, Caltrans, maybe even Becker's office,
showed up, but they're trying to figure out parking up there, Burnham Strip or not, and I don't know the outcome of that, but I think that maybe, I don't know if that's why the project maybe hasn't started yet, but it was supposed to start this week. But I do want to acknowledge Caltrans is paving Highway 92, which definitely really needed it. I don't know those of you, if you have to travel it, there was some serious rutting in that asphalt, and they've been doing some paving there. So, but again, it's a $47 million project, and they said, oh, this project will go away if we have to ask for more money to do some work that we were asking. So.
It would be nice to have another meeting with a Caltrans representative again at some point. We mentioned that, right, just to see what's really going on. So, yeah. Thank you. Any other city council reports? Any other city council reports?
To the mayor, I think it's just something that I want to bring up. I got a phone call from Julie Shankman, who's very active in the Big Wave. I'm sure you guys know about that. And she really expressed to me that she would really like for us as a council to go to one of the events and just become more involved, because they are part of our, it's Half Moon Bay, and they are going to supply, we're going to offer hundreds of jobs, is what she's saying, and she wants us to actually look at the facility and tour the facility. So I told her to be more active and let us know when it comes around so that we can, because I've been going, but that's because I've been going. And I told her I haven't really seen anything on my agenda, so she's going to bring that forward. So she'd really like us to go as a group, and when they have a grand opening that's going to be coming. The other thing I want to point out is there's a Kirk Reamer and Dave Shore have been pushing hard on a pool at the high school, and I think they got a bond, and Matthew can give more details. I don't have my papers because it's in 700 other of the papers. I lost it. But they are proposing, if I'm not mistaken, Matthew, you can correct me, it's $13 million to redo the old pools and $29 million to rebuild new pools, and they were pushing more towards the rebuild. And they got, what, $13 million in a bond or something like that. So they want to work with us, but they're not asking for money. They want us to support the pool and see if if council and the city could help in any way. So that's one thing that they're moving forward on. I think Matthew can allude to it.
I can update you on that. We're actually meeting with them on the 13th. So just to get all the facts and details about where we may or may not be able to help them. And by the way, if Julie Shankman would like to come to one of our meetings, and just
give us ask her to come tonight, but she will be here. It's just tonight she didn't pull it off, I asked her to come forward.
Going on a tour sounds great, so let us know.
And then also what I brought forward when Dave Shore talked to me over the weekend, they weren't thinking about disabled kids and using the pool, so I brought that forward to them, so they're going to now incorporate that, and then they want to incorporate Big Wave. That was the other thing. I kind of put that in his pocket, and he didn't even think about that. So now he's talking with Julie Shankman now and how they can work together with Big Wave.
Great. Thank you.
So I think what we need is a little bit direction, too, if we can put that on the agenda for discussion. Is that what we're talking about, Matthew? Because I know Dave's been talking to you.
I know that there's been a request that we do a resolution supporting the pool project, and so that, I think for us to bring that forward, we would need to agendize that for a future meeting. But I think, as the mayor shared, we've got a meeting with them next week, and we can get some clarity on that.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more on the 13th and have an idea of what the ask really is. So, great. Okay, well, thanks, everybody, members of the public, participating. Thank you for staff. Thank you to fellow council members. This meeting is now adjourned. Have a good evening.